It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Hello, everybody. I'm back, and happy holidays from our Mac Break Weekly team, Jason Snell, Andy Iannocco, Alex Lindsay. It's a light news day, but we will talk about the Apple Card. Is it going to Chase? Netflix plans for spending $17 billion next year, and the end of the line for Filmic Pro. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 898, recorded Tuesday, December 5th, 2023. Dedicated Vulcan Salute Apparatus. This episode of Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Fastmail. Reclaim your privacy, boost productivity, and make email yours with Fastmail. Try it free now for 30 days at fastmail.com/twit. And by ZipRecruiter. Good news. If you're hiring, you've got help. ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter works for you to find great candidates fast. Its smart technology identifies qualified candidates for you, and you can invite your top choices to apply. Try it free. ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. And by ZocDoc, the free app where you can find and book appointments online with thousands of top-rated, patient-reviewed physicians and specialists. Filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat almost any condition. Go to ZocDoc.com/MacBreak and download the ZocDoc app for free. Well, happy holidays. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover everything Apple. And today we have decorated the set. Thank you, Burke. Who are Burke's helpers and who are the elves?
Sebastian and Debbie,
who are actually our party meisters here at the Twit Brick House. Well, no, this is the East Side Studio. I have been, you'll forgive me.
The cottage.
Where the hell am I?
You're regressing.
I have been on a digital detox for the last week, and I'm still a little spacey. But you know what's funny? Everybody said, Leo, you're gonna bail in a day. And actually the hard thing was getting my phone back at the end of it and having to sit down at a computer. What a relief. There's Jason Snell. Thank you for filling in for me, Jason, from the Incomparable and sixcolors.com.
We reach.
I'm impressed you could do it with both hands.
Infinite diversity and infinite combinations. We'll just be a little philosophical today, Leo. That's fine. It works.
Yeah, it's deep, man.
No one's deeper than Mr. Spock.
I could do this hand, but this hand's it's a little bit of, you see my pinky's got a mind of its own.
Thing to look for in Star Trek is if somebody gives the Vulcan salute, but what they do is they start off camera and then it comes up like this, is they totally can't do it.
It's taped together something, right?
And that's like that first time the lady to Pow, who does that at the first Star Trek episode with Vulcans, it is a totally, she can't do it. And they like holding her hand below and she's like, okay, can I stop now? Can I stop now, please? Okay,
yeah, I'll show you the trick we use here at the Twit, wherever the hell we are. It's all about gaffer's tape. So you just put a little gaffer's tape.
On the back of the hand.
On the back of the magic. Hand. Hold that pinky in place because he just wants to run. And now it's easy.
That's it.
Hello, Jason. Thank you for filling in for me. I appreciate it. Andy Iannocco, brother in arms, brother in sideburns.
Hello.
Good to see you.
Yes, I think by like the first season of The Next Generation, or was it the second feature film, they basically, when they cast someone, they would say, okay, now you're going to have to give the Vulcan salute. Do you think you'll be needing the apparatus? And then, you know what? Yeah. And so this armature that they can basically clamp onto this, so long as you don't see it from this angle, you don't know that their hand is in the apparatus.
If they have a dedicated Vulcan salute apparatus.
And the pride that some of the cast, that, you know what, it was great working with them. It was a treasure. I hope to work them again, but they're kind of an apparatus kind of cast member. You know what I mean?
So you have to do it with your left hand, right? I mean, I could do it fine with my right hand.
Is it the right work?
It's all good.
Okay.
Vulcans don't care.
Gibson always does it with the left
hand. They're not about rules.
No, they're not. They're not
about rules. No. Thank you, Andy. We do have a show title immediately upon start, dedicated Vulcan salute apparatus.
This is what it was like all last week, Leo. You didn't miss a thing.
I love it. And Mr. Alex Lindsay, the Lord of the Dance. Look at that. Perfect. Perfect Vulcan
salute. It hurts if you do it too many times.
Yeah. Well, you got to build
what
up.
What happens is it goes. I go for a long time without doing it because I don't see a lot of Vulcans on my daily drive, and so when you have to do it again, you're like, can I still do it? Can I still do it?
Did Leonard Nimoy appreciate exactly how much he screwed things up for everybody? Because the entire character is based on what do you look like? What is your voice like? What are your mannerisms? What historical Jewish like sigil do you remember? Like, oh my God, now we're going to have to like, everybody has to have the Nimoy skill set with no room for error.
First scene in the episode, I remember this dimly, and so thank you for confirming it. First scene in the episode, Amok Time.
Lilovsky.
Yeah. The idea came, says Nimoy, who had seen the gesture during a blessing in an Orthodox Jewish shul. The idea came when I saw the way Joe Pevney, the episode's director, was staging the scene. He had me approach T-Pow, and I felt a greeting gesture was called for. So I suggested the blessing to Joe, who accepted it immediately. So, yeah, I wonder if Nimoy ever regretted that, or maybe he thought, you know what, I'm giving a holy blessing to people. And you're right, he's doing it with his right hand, so I feel okay now.
Right.
He's actually not doing it.
I mean, he knew immediately it was hard, because then they said to Celia Lovsky, who played T'Pow, okay, you do this too, and she's like, I can't. So it's like, out of the
oopsies
shot.
Yeah. Oopsies.
Okay, can we give blessings to like one of the greatest like near final lines in Star Trek history? Like, live long and prosper, Spock. Like, I have murdered my captain. Clearly, I shall do neither.
I shall do neither.
Oh. Oh, wow.
Great stuff. It's the Star Trek podcast, right, Leo? That's what we're doing now?
Wow. I feel like I've been...
Star Trek podcast.
Christmas Star Trek podcast. And a little Wars, Star Wars.
Where's the Christmas?
And we've thrown a little portal just for fun.
This is the new Star Trek Christmas special that we're going to.
Is there a new Star? I hope not.
No,
I'll get my old record player from the old room. We'll use that as the VR projector.
You know, Apple TV should do that.
We can talk about Apple VR.
Apple TV should do a new Star Trek. Get together with who owns it now? Paramount? I can't remember.
Paramount. Yeah. That's one of our stories, Leo.
Well, let's tell the story, because God knows we need a story. This is a
Apple
slow
and
news
Paramount
week.
Are considering bundling their streaming services together as an offer, at least, which is Paramount famously not for sale, but totally for sale, looking for suitors. And at least this report to the Wall Street Journal that they're also kind of talking about, could we do a thing where like you as an Apple TV subscriber, you get a deal on Paramount Plus. And if you're a Paramount Plus subscriber, you get a deal on Apple TV Plus. That apparently they're talking, it's not really about a merger. It's just about like trying to find maybe another way to bundle them together as a way to get both of them in more homes.
And it's really just an excuse for the Wall Street Journal to have a picture of John Hamm canoodling with Jennifer Aniston from The Morning Show, which has nothing to do Paramount Plus. But thank you, Wall Street Journal, for that. So, I mean, Google already with Google TV, you can subscribe to HBO, YouTube TV, I should say.
Well, you can do all those things. I think that, right. But I do think that lots of people, and I think Apple included, have thought about the idea that what consumers want, they say they don't want cable.
Right.
But they kind of want cable. Now that they've seen it, a lot of us who worked in cable, when everyone said, we want to break apart this so that you don't have to subscribe, make one subscription and get forced to have all these channels. And we were like, do you? Do you really want to not have that? Because you'd be surprised at how much you're going to pay if you have to buy them a la carte. And so now everyone's like, you know, a lot of people like me are like, I'm starting to turn ones off. The ones that came in late, like Paramount, I haven't turned on. You know, like I just, you know, it's not. Like it, and so now everyone's and I think that when Apple and Amazon and Google are all in a position of going, hey, you could just subscribe to Apple TV, like with Apple News, you could just subscribe to Apple TV and get all these things. Now, this isn't that yet, but it's starting to go towards that as these companies have a harder and harder time generating profits. You know, I think that's going to be the challenge.
I mean, part of the problem is that one of the reasons why cable TV was so annoying was that, okay, what channels do I actually want? Oh, this, and I sometimes watch that. Like, hey, congratulations, here are 18 channels directed just to competitive axe throwing. Like, yeah, how much would it be without those 18 channels? Same amount of money. Like, oh, and plus 43 Central American finance channels. Like, again, not in my interest. But no. It's all the same package. Congratulations. And we just added another 100 new channels that you're not interested in. And so that's why, like, the streaming was so great to begin with, because it's like, oh, $10 a month, it will give you 80% of what you want. And I actually just did an audit a few weeks ago of just the sort of like Survivor sort of thing, like the Rose Ceremony, whatever, where it's like, okay, I'm subscribed to 8 different streaming services. Which ones are going to get these 2 roses? And it's like, I can't, there's so many that would not make the cut because I just don't enjoy them enough. And I kind of held on to them when they were $6, $7 a month. But now that, oh my God, why am I paying $16 a month for something that only allows me to watch Bob's Burgers without having to skip over the commercials on my DVR, you know?
Just to be clear, Survivor does not have any roses in it. I just want to be clear about that.
I'm trying to see.
We know that. We know that.
I'm trying to be inclusive so that fans of The Bachelor will understand the reference. If anything, I'm honoring both shows that they've entered the zeitgeist.
How do we not have a show that mixes Survivor with The Bachelorette? The Bachelor, like, together, yeah. That would be, I don't even know how you do that, but it seems
The Bachelor is sort of Survivor with dating.
Whichever of you ladies can stand the most on a telephone pole in the middle of a frigid ocean gets to enjoy one date with me.
Survivors.
Yeah,
that's so Warren Beatty energy.
The hard part is that part of what made these channels work, I used to work at Prime Sports Network, and Prime Sports Network got 50 cents a sub, you know, so that was it was part of a larger, you know, group of things, but it doesn't, that math doesn't work. You can't run Prime Sports Network when people are picking and choosing. It only works when everyone pays a little bit of money. And so that was the,
by the way, all of the local sports networks are dying.
Yes.
Probably for that reason. Yeah. ESPN, is more like $16 a subscriber, at least last time.
Oh, no, yeah. It was I know back in the day when I was doing it, it was like $8 for HBO, and HBO was the big game in town.
Right. That you could choose ESPN HBO. Like ESPN, every subscriber paid for ESPN and Prime.
Right.
I think Tech TV actually paid the cable guys. It's like, please take us.
So this rumor about Apple TV Plus and Paramount is interesting because Paramount's base rate is $6 for the base rate with ads, right? So it's not that expensive.
Yeah, but
it makes
ads.
Me wonder, there is a higher tier with Showtime content and a higher tier where you don't see the ads, but the base rate to get you in the door is $6 because they're going to make the money on the ads. And it makes me wonder what the terms of a deal with Apple would be. Would there be little or no? Like, could Apple just roll the ad tier of Paramount Plus into every Apple TV sub because Paramount is going to be foregoing, you know, $5 or $6 a month from that sub, but they can upsell and they've got presumably more eyeballs looking at those ads, which is how they're making money on that channel. I don't know, but like the economics, and then what's the reverse of that? How do you get Paramount Plus to say, you know, for $6 extra or some sort of add-on to bring in the Apple TV Plus content? That's what it would have to be, though, because as you said, you can already like add channels in Apple TV or in Amazon Prime or in Google TV to get these streaming services. So the idea here is there a savings if you bundle them together that induces people to subscribe to both?
Part of the savings is we all have subscription fatigue, and it would be nice to have fewer little paper cuts on our bill month.
Yeah.
The interesting stat in the Journal article, and this comes from Antenna because nobody tells these numbers, is that both Apple TV and Paramount Plus had churn, a customer defection rate of 7% in October. The industry average is 5.7. So they're both losing customers at a faster rate than the industry, which surprises me. But then I think about it and I think, you know, I subscribe to Paramount Plus for Yosemite. That's done. Apple TV hasn't had, Slow Horses is coming back. That'll be worth watching.
Yep.
Really? What else happened while I was gone?
Yeah, it's back. It's great.
I love
For
that
All Mankind
show.
Is on. It's great. There's a bunch of stuff there. But yeah. You're right. I mean, with the writer's strike and the actor's strike and all of that, things on a lot of services, maybe not Netflix, because another item that we might
talk
about.
Yeah, well, let's
talk
Netflix about Netflix. Yeah, yeah.
About how they've got content. But a lot of these services are a little bit thin on the ground and raising prices. And it's a moment that I do wonder. I want to throw out this wacky idea, though, because the journal reports just about Apple and Paramount. But I do start to wonder, wouldn't it be very much like Apple to take this thing we're talking about how people maybe actually do want a bundle? I wonder if Apple might try to build a little mini bundle
a
of
cable,
its own
where
it puts, you save some money and you pick up three or four different streaming services for one price through Apple, not the, you know, paying all,
why
full
would
price
they do
for
that,
all of them, but the bundle.
Save Apple TV?
Apple News does that right now. Like, that's what Apple News is doing with magazines and everything else at the moment, is they're bundling content that you have. I mean, I think that is the model.
And let's face it, you could do that because all those magazines are dying. The newspapers that do well did not want to be part of Apple News. It was the herd, the members of the herd who were falling behind.
I think I don't know how it's working for everybody. I know for me as a user, between, you know, Apple News kind of just became what I check for news. I don't, you know, like the folks that aren't in Apple News kind of stopped existing for me because there's enough news to keep me up to speed. You know, I do check a couple of things. I check Tech Meme and I check, you know, CNN out of habit. But outside of that, I everything else kind of fell away. And I think that's Apple's angle. My biggest complaint with Apple News is that when I mute something, I never want to see it again. And they keep on showing it to me anyway. Like they keep on filling up the space with, I'm like, I muted it. It's just like why are we still here?
Yeah.
You know, like,
you should see my Facebook feed.
Yeah.
I mean, every time it's filled with weirdly pervy
bikini
photos
it with Facebook and I understand
and
it with
I say
X,
no, and I no, no, and they come back again and again and again.
It's such an Apple non-Apple-y thing to do is to keep showing me things like, as a user I said. You know that there's a contract issue there. Yeah. That they promised people X amount of exposure. So you know that anytime someone does something weird, you know anytime a consumer company does something weird, you know they chose money over people.
And you talk about like a very Apple-y thing to do when it's like, oh, wow, here's an article that I kind of want to like follow up on or use someplace else. Like I'll do, oh, great. And here's a share, just copy the link. The link takes me back into Apple News, not directly to the article itself.
You share it to somebody. You can't do it. So you have
the power to be your best. Thank you, Apple.
So I cut
That's very consumer
title.
Friendly.
So I cut and paste the title. I put it into my webpage, and then I cut and paste that back. I'm like,
isn't that frustrating? Yeah. That's ridiculous.
It is. That is a super un-Apple-y thing.
That's why I don't use it at all, because I only read news so I can bookmark it.
Lock-in is not part of Apple's brand, Alex. I'm surprised at you.
Yeah.
Speaking of, before we get to this, let's do the Netflix story, and then I want to know what your expert prognosis is for all of this, because we're headed down. Clearly, things aren't working right. Netflix, Ted Sarandos, this co-CEO, speaking at the UBS Global Media and Communications Conference in New York yesterday, said, oh, we're doing great. Not that COVID was good for anybody, but it did give us muscle for delivering content in an uncertain time. And the writer's strike, we didn't really have much interruption in our delivery to customers. Bridgerton, Cobra Kai, Emily in Paris, all in production. There's going to be Zack Snyder's first Rebel Moon film.
Yep.
And there's no reason why it would. It the question is, what will it disrupt in the spring? Because
it takes a while.
It takes a while because you're in post for 6 months. Right. You know, for a lot of these shows, 3 to 6 months.
So these are all shot and produced, and
they were already
in post during the writer's strike. Yeah.
Well, they have so much that they buy that they can spread it out better than anybody else.
Well, that's the main reason I bookmarked this, because get ready for this. How much
international where the strike didn't happen?
Don't do that to Jason. That's just rude. I don't mind if he talks. Oh, wait a minute. He froze up. There he goes.
I don't know. Something bad happened.
They put it.
Nothing happened. Nothing happened. Everything is great.
Nothing happened last week.
Indoors.
I mean, this is what happened right before the
shelter
event.
Shelter in place.
Wait. We're not supposed to talk about that. So the
Netflix spent or will spend in 2024. And what was Apple's budget? I remember it was like $6 billion. They were all excited. We're going to spend $6 billion a year on production. $17 billion next
and
year.
That's a billion less than they
planned. It's a billion less.
Like, they saved a billion. They saved $1 billion this year because of the strike. That was the whole problem, is that they, you know, they have less production to do. And so they actually save money, which will go into next, you know, they'll spend whatever they're going to spend next year. You know, it's a very different approach. I mean, Apple's taking the, we're going to do a lot less content, but spend a lot of money on each piece of content. Netflix, you know, kind of has the shotgun approach of, we're just going to build a lot of content, and they're trying to serve a lot of different markets in a different way. And I think that that's going to, it'll be interesting to see. I think that, yeah, I think that Netflix will probably, there are some changes in the way that they're probably going to mix up the content. There'll probably be less narrative content going into the future because of the strikes. And save some money, that's what's probably happening across the board, and a lot of people spending less money on narrative, but doing more money per unit, you know, so the narratives become a tent pole and the other stuff fills in the spaces.
Two areas of focus, again, reading from Variety, for Netflix in terms of new original products are feature animation and local language unscripted programming.
Unscripted is the key word there.
Yep. Cheap. Although, very happy to say again, that Adam Sandler's Leo was the biggest animated film to debut on Netflix today. Is that about me?
Good for him.
What's that about? Is that about me? Am I in it?
That's the problem, isn't it? That's the problem with for the streamers, is we don't know what it is.
It's Adam Sandler. Yeah. He does about a movie a month.
Netflix and some of these other, actually Apple, that play internationally have the advantage that they are getting content from places where there weren't writer strikes and there weren't actor strikes, because it's different unions. And so they can patch that in and make, and that helps them even more keep that stream kind of flowing.
And that makes it's easier for Netflix to do that than Apple, because Netflix's overall average quality is much lower. They just do a lot more of it.
But there's always something to watch.
The narratives that they do, you're like, do people actually watch this? Like, is this actually? And I'm not talking, I mean, just talking about like schlocky acting with schlocky writing with schlocky production values. Like, and you're just kind of like, I don't know why. I think they're just
some of the stuff, like The Gray Man, is high value, high production value, and still crap.
I do a podcast about this on Relay called Downstream, and Julie Alexander is my co-host, and she is an analyst and she knows so much. And she talked about Netflix, said you almost want to think about Netflix like it's a cable subscription. That Netflix contains, you can't treat it as a single entity, even though it is that. Think of it as a cable bundle that you're buying into. And part of that is they have international content. They also have high-value content. They have low-value content. It's what Zaslav is trying to do with Max, which is say, well, if we put the cheaper Discovery stuff in and the expensive HBO thing stuff, we get a spread of content. And Netflix does that too. Netflix has the stuff that they really spend on, and they got the stuff that is mid-budget and nice, and then they've got a bunch of stuff that's cheap, and it allows them to have all that volume, because the truth is you don't always want to watch prestige TV. Sometimes you want to watch reality. You want to watch Great British Bake Off. Sometimes you want to watch some high value Korean import. Sometimes you want to watch a reality show from US where people are buying houses or apartments or antiques or whatever. And like, it's a mixture like you would have found on cable back in the day. And that is sort of one of the games Netflix is playing, because it can all be high budget stuff.
Well, and I think that I agree with you. All the examples that you have are a diverse selection that everyone wants. What I'm talking about is another American narrative about something where you have other things that were released in the same space. And I'm just kind of like, I don't understand why anyone's buying this. You know, like, it's not like it you know, but I totally agree with you. I think you'll see more of the American, the British Bake Offs, and more of the, you know, Chef's Table, and more like those things are all great things to fill in, because from a contractual perspective, they're a lot less expensive in the long term. Because we have to think about it now with the new contract. You're talking about the cost of the long tail, you know, is a huge deal. Like,
that's what I was going to say, is one of the reasons you do more of that stuff is algorithmically. Yeah. You've got stuff that people are watching, and you might not be able to buy more of that or produce more of that in time. But if you do something like it, the Netflix algorithm is just going to shunt people over to it. And like, the long tail extends to things that are kind of like it when you're on Netflix. And it's real powerful.
I think that the Netflix is going to be far more interested in having the long tail be non-scripted and to have a lot of volume there that people are watching, because there's a thing in the contract that says if it's more than, there's a change in the way it's managed if it goes over 20% of the total number of subscribers. And in that model, I could see Netflix taking things off at 18%. And I think that you're going to see a lot more windowing in Netflix than you saw before, which is that they're going to take stuff, narrative stuff, out of the system because they're not going to want to keep paying for it. And so there's going to be, you know, it's going to be a different, you know, the model, the business model. I mean, the strikes were a huge success for the actors and the writers. But we are going to see some nominal changes in how a lot of the content gets created, because it just has to be managed inside the construct. Yeah.
I have been informed that Leo is a wacky coming-of-age musical comedy as a lizard named Leo about the last year of elementary school as seen through the eyes of a class pet. Thank you. 34.6 million views in the first 6 days. That Adam Sandler deal is really paying off.
Yeah. Again, he's exactly what makes Netflix work for itself, because they're like Amazon delivering food processors or whatever. They know exactly the demographics of everybody who's watching. They know when they started. They know if they bailed after a certain episode. They know if they paused and rewatched certain parts of it. They know that for whatever reason, I'm more of a fan of Adam Savage than Adam Sandler, so the brain comes back with Adam Savage almost immediately, but they know that like Adam Sandler is exactly who like Netflix wants. They will get, when it comes, he will get as much money as he wants for any project he wants, because he always delivers.
When it comes to Adam Sandler, the only thing that's tested is your patience, right?
He's interesting, because all I need to know is give me one frame, and if he's wearing his street clothes and he's in some sort of a luxury like vacation place, I know it's probably going to stink. However, if part of his deal was, look, if you're willing to pay for like a 3-week vacation to the Cayman Islands and I don't have to ever change out of whatever I woke up in, you got me.
I always feel like that's how they get those produced.
But when he acts, he's good.
They say, Jennifer Aniston, how would you like to go to the Seychelles Islands for three weeks, all expenses paid? Yeah, no, Punch Drunk Love is brilliant. I mean, there's some brilliant Adam Sandler movies. What's the
Punch Drunk Love? I was going to say,
Punch Drunk Love one is great. What,
Uncut. The Water Boy.
Uncut Gems. The Water Boy.
You're baiting me.
I'm just trolling you.
Stop it.
Opperman. Oh, that's on a movie.
What is that line that Khan says that he tasks me
and I shall have him.
I shall have you, James.
Top five. I don't know if you're going to be able to do five. Adam Sandler movies. Uncut Gems. Brilliant. Punch Drunk Love. Brilliant. Yeah. What's the one with Love, Rain, or Me? Is that that was quite good. What's the name of that one? Any others? That's three. We need two more.
I can't remember the name of the movie, but it was the one where he played basically himself, but if he had a terminal illness.
Love, Rain, or Me. Yeah, that's the one I was thinking of as well. He's dying. Or no. This is the one where his family died and he sits there playing video games all day. Not Happy Gilmore. Not 50 First Dates. Sorry.
Uncut Gems is really good.
I think everybody should just watch Uncut Gems. We'll leave it at that.
It's clearly the answer. It's Happy Gilmore, The Water Boy, Deuce Bigalow, Male Gigolo, Mr. Deeds, and The Hot Chick. Those are Rob Schneider is mostly the lead in several of those, but Adam Sandler is also.
You know, if you weren't satisfied with Adam Sandler,
you got to get paid. You got to get paid.
With my last breath, I spit at thee. Yeah,
is this how our friendship ends, Jason? We've been friends for 30 years now.
He's baiting you.
This is like, you know what? If it'd be worth ending our friendship over Adam Sandler. That's unfortunate, Jason.
He does a lot. I'm just looking at all these movies. I haven't heard about
a gift box of cheeses that you were going to get for Christmas this year. I think I'll just give it to the UPS guy now. Yeah. That's
almost more about cheese than Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
Zing. Boom.
Zing. You're coming back. Bada-bing. Good Lord. Look at all the movies he's made. This is ridiculous.
Lots of movies.
Jeez. You know, some. Wow. Okay.
But boy, I mean, honestly, have you
it was
ever
called
seen,
Rain
like,
or Me.
Movie?
That was the name of it. Okay.
Yeah. The Wedding Singer, Billy Madison. Sure. Yeah.
I mean, his movies average to a perfect C, because they're either amazing A-level movies or they're like,
that's right,
Jack and Jill.
Look,
really?
Here's some. I'm done trolling Andy. What I'll say is Adam Sandler is a very talented man who also is a very canny businessman, and he knows what movies pay. And he and Netflix have had a very lucrative partnership, because the kind of movies he wants to make hit it for Netflix exactly the way Netflix wants them to for what they cost. And so he does that. But because he is very talented, certain directors will look at him and say, I would like you in my really good movie. And Adam Sandler's like, great.
That's what happens.
I can do good movies too.
He can,
but meanwhile, he's cashing the checks. Yeah. And I don't blame him because it's a tough world.
Don't go to a movie where he's playing Shecky Moskowitz, a drug dealer, Shifty, or Dink the Clown. Stay out of those. The characters he's played, Steve Polychrononopoulos. Okay. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you really know the entire oeuvre there, Jason Snell.
No, I just have his IMDb page. I will point out that when you search for Adam Sandler on IMDb, it does not come back with one of those nice movies that you mentioned. It comes back with actor, comma, The Waterboy.
Yeah, the top movies. Look at the top movies. The Waterboy, Little Nicky, The Wedding Singer, and Big Daddy.
Oh, Big Daddy, where he does a Louisiana accent. Ooh.
All right, I don't know how we got into the Adam Sandler stories, but let's... you guys didn't tell me the big story of the week. Grand Theft Auto 6 trailer came out yesterday.
Is it coming to iPhone, though? Yeah, that's... But also, I love these trailers because it's like, oh, wow, that looks really great. Coming out in 2025.
Yeah, exactly.
Assuming that it doesn't get delayed. Like,
what engine? Do you know, Alex, what engine they use? Is it Unreal? Because it really looks...
It looks amazing.
Very realistic.
It's either their own or Unreal, and I'm not sure. Yeah. I don't know the answer.
I mean, anyway, I can't show you the trailer because it's full of things I can't show
you. Cuss words. Ungodly words, yes.
But it's pretty... We're realistic.
Only the fifth day of Lent, everybody. A holy period.
That's right.
It's their own proprietary one. It's called Rage, which is Rockstar Advanced Game Engine.
And for a long time, it was kind of the laughing stock. Remember, there was a whole series of TikToks of people doing the walk, the hooker walk in the Rockstar games. But they've clearly improved it quite a bit. It feels like Unreal almost. The reality
and
is
not only that, but the ability of them to like commit to a storyline. Which is just seems like this seems like a trailer for a movie that I would want to watch.
Yeah, it looks like a trailer for a movie. Yeah. All right. Let's see here. Let's take a break and we'll find something else to talk about.
Yeah, we've done enough damage.
WhatsApp update for iOS. That could be it. I don't know.
Oh, Goldman Sachs. Let's talk about banking.
We've got exciting news about a credit card partnership that might be faltering.
Well, the weather outside is frightful.
Wait. I know. Everybody,
partnerships are problematic.
Our show.
We hate to do this to you. You're gonna have to listen to an ad before we talk about the finance story.
Oh, you've been waiting.
It'll be worth it. Oh my God. Hey, look what I brought. I brought the tea.
It's called the tease, Leo. As we're teasing the next segment
nice
right
tease.
Now.
So
people want to, we're helping you out.
Thank
we're
you.
No, stout fellow. As a fellow Gen Xer, I understand your perplexity, but I said not tease, but the T-E-A, which is a euphemism that the millennials and Generation Z
but we were
used
also
to refer
doing
to as the gossip.
A tease, you
scumbag.
See, Andy. So we were doing both.
We brought the tea. A play on words.
If you want a preview of how last week went, you see we're still...
This is
nothing
it.
Like Snell on Rye, I'm telling you. Jason Snell, Andy Inoko, Alex Lindsay. We will have more Mac Break Weekly in a moment.
Maybe.
Well, we won't have anything to talk about, but we will have more Mac Break.
Jason, we were lucky that Leo came back at all, okay? Don't
rub it in.
He wants to go back now.
We're re-dampening his elan. Re-dampen his elan.
The hardest thing in the world to leave, let me tell you. And it's getting worse by the minute. Our show today brought to you by Fastmail. Oh, I do love Fastmail. Make email work for you with Fastmail. You can use Fastmail with your existing... It's a mail server. Now, I got to tell you, if you're using one of the freebies, and I notice everybody uses Gmail or Outlook.com or the old Hotmail or Yahoo. I guess we're cheap, right? Well, why not? It's free. But I got to tell you, you're paying for free email. You're paying for it in your privacy. And maybe even more important to you, you're paying it for in support. If you're running your business, let's say, on Gmail, and they decide, for whatever reason, you don't have an account anymore, there's no door you can knock on. There's no phone number to call. That's it. No support at all because it's free. Okay, Fastmail's not free, but as little as $3 a month, and there is somebody to call. There is great support. And you're the customer, not the product. And I think that's really important. Fastmail is run by people who care about email. They use the open source Cyrus server. It's the best IMAP server. They contribute back to the community with great code edits. They also, by the way, come up with standards that are widely adopted. I mean, they're really a leader in email. So you're using a really solid server. You can use your existing client. It works just fine. But they've also done a great job. iOS, Android clients are fantastic. That's all I use now. I don't use the built-in mail clients on either platform. They also have webmail. I know a lot of you now, a lot of us are used to webmail. And the webmail with Fastmail is great. You can customize your workflow with colors. You can customize the swipes. There's night mode. Actually, you can, in the quick settings menu, you can choose a new theme. You can switch between light and dark. You can change your text size. And you don't even leave the screen you're on. Those quick settings are great. Just one of many ways Fastmail is getting better and better all the time. I love Fastmail because you can use it with your password manager, if you're using Bitwarden or 1Password, to generate unique email addresses for every single login. Now, that's double security. Not only is it a unique password, thanks to your password manager, you're also generating a unique email address that goes into your inbox but is not traceable back to you and no hacker will know it. So it really adds to the security. You can buy a domain if you want through Fastmail. I strongly recommend that. Certainly a business shouldn't have a domain at AOL.com. You should have your business name .com. And even an individual, I think it's wonderful to have the family name .com and then have the family email through Fastmail. So you can buy the domain. You can also bring the domain. And almost all my domains now, the email goes through Fastmail because they set it up so that it uses all of the protocols for email authentication, which really helps your email get through spam filters and all of that. For more than 20 years, Fastmail has been a leader in email and email privacy because you're the customer. Advertisers are left out. They don't sell your data. You're the reason they're there. For free email, your info is the reason they're supplying it. At Fastmail, your data stays yours. Better productivity, $3 a month, better spam filters, no, of course, no ads, better productivity tools, send, snooze. You can use folders or labels. You know, if you like Gmail labels, you can use labels. If you like standard IMAP folders, you can use folders. You can use both. There's a really good search, which is nice because I keep all my email. I never throw anything out. And Fastmail lets me search through it very quickly. It's become a database of all the important details in my life. Just try it. 30 days free right now if you go to fastmail.com/twit. I've been recommending Fastmail for at least 10 years, and I'm thrilled to have them as an advertiser. Reclaim your privacy. Boost productivity with Fastmail. Try it now for 30 days. fastmail.com/twit. F-A-S-T, fastmail, mail.com/T-W-I. We thank them so much for their support of Mac Break Weekly. Make email yours. I didn't ask the question. I don't want to go back to the streaming thing, but I was curious. I know, Jason, this is like a big thing for you because you have a podcast on it. But all of you, how this is going to shake out? Are we re-aggregating all the content we disaggregated? You know, we split it all up. We got a la carte, and now it's getting back together again. Is that the future? What does it look like?
I mean, especially when you factor in that Spotify had a huge, huge round of layoffs last week, and they are
17%, 1,500 people.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they are like the giant of music streaming. And if they're not making money, I mean, obviously they wasted a lot of money on stupid money for stupid things that probably didn't affect their business as much as they were going to. But
like,
I think that we're seeing
like
a huge
podcasts.
Well, I'm just saying that like maybe Joe Rogan would have taken less than $200 million. Like, I mean, I know it took a lot to tease him away from his stand-up career, but I'm saying that like that was not one of those things that paid off. So I just think that we're seeing a huge readjustment in, like, now that everybody's, Disney is not doing well with this. Netflix is not doing well with this. Everybody's sort of desperate to find better solutions. And even just hiking the price is not going to be enough of it. So we're going to see major rethinks, major reorganizations, and a good chance that whatever it is that has made streaming worthwhile for you might be changing in the next 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, when this all started and people were cutting the cord, I kept saying to people, don't worry, they're going to get their money, right? They're going to get their money from you. You're going to save money, they're going to get their money. And so what's happening now is the ratcheting up of all of those services, and you have to choose. And the next step is the great rebundling, which is, well, wait a second, can I save some money? And the answer is yes, we're going to put these all together in a bundle, and then you're going to buy that. And you might be able to opt out for some things and go a la carte, but you will reach that point. I mean, like, when I have the Apple One premium bundle, and it was the same price or less than I was paying for the individual services. And that's the trick with some of the bundle logic is, in the end, you pay for stuff you don't want because it's still the best deal that's out there. And you get Apple News with it, and you're like, all right, whatever. But you get the stuff that you want too. And that's going to happen with all of these services. There's going to be consolidation. Some of these companies are going to get bought by the other companies, and they're going to get merged together. That is inevitably going to happen. But in the end, yeah, I think that you're going to end up, if you choose to go a la carte, you're going to have to be really, really tough in terms of saying, I'm just going to do these handful of services. And otherwise, we're going to be driven back into bundles, because the bundle will get you the best deal because everything's a little discounted inside the bundle.
Essentially, YouTube TV is cable.
Yeah.
It's just over the top.
The best version.
Sure.
But it's my cable, and it's better. I like it. January 1, we're turning off Comcast. We have to keep the internet. And as you point out, Jason, they've raised the price to the point where they're still getting their money from me. But at least YouTube TV is much better. Even just watching football now, I get lots of glitches on Comcast, but the data on YouTube TV is great. I can fast forward. Mm-hmm. I can do all the things I want to do.
It's the future. YouTube TV has changed the way I watch football because it's one thing to have TiVo, but the thing for me, for whatever reason now, I get on, I start about 20 minutes late, and I'm just jumping 15 seconds really, really fast constantly through slow plays, through the commercials. And
you know what I figured out, Alex?
Something else for a while.
I figured out how long each break is, and I will use Siri. I'll say skip ahead 2 minutes, skip ahead 3 minutes. This one's a 2:45, and I know, and it gets right back to the play. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's lovely. So I think that it's really lovely. And I think that YouTube.
Please don't do that to us, ladies and gentlemen. Our ads are a variable length. You may miss some very important content.
Well, the thing is that the I think YouTube and TikTok and some of the other ones are the sleeping, you know, here where we're talking about all the streaming, but the size of the streaming table keeps on getting smaller, because when I look at what my kids watch, it's a huge amount of YouTube. You know, like it's there, and not like YouTube TV, just YouTube. And when I look at what I watch of time, probably 70 to 80% of my watching habits are on YouTube, like watching things that I'm interested in and saving things. I have this thing, I save things all the time because I'll look at something I know that the rest of the
family will watch. It's so easy, and you have unlimited storage. Just save it.
And then I open it up. Well, I mean, I'm talking just there's YouTube TV, and then there's just YouTube, and I'll have hours and hours of YouTube stuff saved up. And if I just feel like sitting on an afternoon, I'll watch, you know, 2 hours of stuff I had saved, you know, and just be kind of in 15 minute or 10 minute or 8 minute increments. And it is, anyway, I guess that's the other one I think people aren't paying as much attention to, is the fact that this
YouTube.
This rolling experience of all the next generation not watching any of this.
Yeah.
You know, like that's the, you know, and I think that, so there's kind of like everyone's trying to get to the top of a room that's filling with water. and they're, you know, some of them are getting close to drowning, and some of them will pull them up and, you know, for a deal.
I prefer to think of it as a garbage compactor, but okay, you get the idea.
Exactly.
I think that's what's happening to podcasting, by the way. One of the reasons podcasting is dying, Spotify, et cetera, frankly, Twit, is because under 30, they watch YouTube, and all the advertisers have gone to YouTube. I just talked to Henry, my son, who is getting a vast sum from Cheetos for a 1-hour stream. And it's like that, I mean, no, at least it's in the family, right? But that's where that money's going.
Right. Right.
Yeah. People, I think that it's easy to forget how valuable it is. Just simple consumer habits are. And once people lose a certain habit, you realize that this industry will realize that, wow, broadcast television was never essential whatsoever. And then, wow, this form of communicating was never essential whatsoever. Because when Letterman went off the air, it broke me of the habit of watching television after a certain hour of the night. And even though I like the new, host, I like the new show, it's great, but it just broke me of the habit of, hey, it's 11:30. It's time for me. It's time for me to watch Stephen Colbert. It's like, no, now it's like, hey, look, a clip from Stephen Colbert has shown up on YouTube. I'll watch it there. And I think that's something that's almost impossible to get over. Once you lose the habit, you can't get them back again.
Little did the VCR makers know that when they taught us time shifting, it was the end of the line for life.
Yeah. I think part of the challenge for all media in general is that that there's so much of the old catalog that's available to us. So the other issue you get into is that most of the series that I watch, you know, my family watched Person of Interest, and then we watched Alias, and then we watched Heroes, and then we watched. Or that's what I just listed off was like a year and a half of our regular watching.
That's all you needed,
you know. And you simply, everyone sat down and watched the next episode, which was, by the way, way more fun when you watch it every day than when you watch it once a week. Yeah. And so the thing is that we're all watching this older content and not necessarily watching a lot of the new, they're getting really picky about the new content and not sure if you want to commit to a series that you don't know is going to get to the end. You know, like I would normally go back and want to watch Game of Thrones, but the last two seasons were so bad, I don't want to see it again. Like, I'm not willing to commit time. Same thing with Lost. I was like, my kids wanted to watch Lost, and I was like, well, you don't know how it ends. Like, you know, like, you don't know, like, this is all, you know, like, it's like, and so the, you know, the, I think that the challenge, you know, I was talking to someone about copyright because, you know, there's some people that have argued that copyright should go back to, I think, I don't remember what the math was, but it's like 1967 or something like that. And I was talking to someone in the industry about that. And they said, yeah, if you did that, it would just destroy the industry. Because if you made all of those songs available before 1967
into the open domain,
everyone would be watching it and using those so much they would, for remixes and everything else, that there'd be nothing new. you got to keep a clamp on some of that, you know, to keep people moving forward for the new stuff.
What about David Shub, who says in our chat room, and I think this is interesting, and it's actually my greatest fear. He says, yeah, basically all the streaming is going to have ads unless you're willing to pay four times more.
Yeah.
Our bill's going to go up a lot.
And they've done the math that they realize the moment that they realize that they make more revenue per user on the ad streams than the premium ad free streams is the moment the jig is up for people who don't like to watch ads, because that means they're going to jack up the rate because they have no reason to make less money on people giving them more money. So the good news is, if there is good news, is that some people don't really care and would rather save the money and see the ads. And for everybody else, you know, network TV, you didn't get the option of not seeing the ads unless eventually you bought a TiVo or something. Right. But like you will still be able to do that. And I'm glad, because I would be miserable if I had to sit through ads ever again. I'm ruined that way because I bought a TiVo in 2001.
It's going to cost you, though, Jason.
It's the end. But it's going to cost me. And also, there may be things.
That's, by the way, what's happening to podcasts, too. I mean, one of the reasons we have a club with ad-free content, that we do the ad-free content, is because we would far rather charge you $7 a month, excuse me, than grind to get sponsorships.
Yeah.
And that's the future for podcasting, probably.
I'm just kind of steadying myself for when. Already these ads are unskippable. I mean, I have Paramount Plus is the only streaming service in which I go cheap for the ad free part of it, because there's enough content that I really, really like, but I don't want to spend $15 a month for it. And of course, you can't skip past the ads. But what I will do is I will thumb the mute button on my Google TV.
I close my eyes.
I hate to be petulant about it, but I just find it kind of annoying. Like, okay, I can put my attention elsewhere. But I'm waiting for the time when like these streamers basically make deals with Google and Apple, saying, how much would it cost for our app to be able to disable the mute button
oh my God.
Selectively? And that's that. When.
You know. Well, I all I'll say is that not that I would ever do this, because of course that I would never engage in any active activity like this. But if you had something with a lot of ads and you had something that would be an HTCP mirror, you know, like do a HTCP handshake, but then pass on that video, you could record it to H.264, and then you could just fast forward through anything you want. Like, and what you do is you just let it run the whole season in the record while you're away for the day. And then you come back and it's all, but the only thing I'll say is that there's always a way around it. and what they're going to drive toward. Now they get the impacts. But I think that also, as someone who, I could never go back to ads like Jason, I could never, ever, ever watch that. Now I changed my credit card and I had to change my credit card number and I lost it for like a day on YouTube and I felt violated. I was like, so help me, if they're putting ads on my paid version, I'm going to kill somebody. If my paid version, because it doesn't give me a warning, it just started putting ads in it. And I thought that my premiere version was having
such
ads.
A normal
and
I was like, guy. He was a little quiet
guy. Yeah.
But
he was like himself.
Yeah.
But they added ads to his premiere membership. I was like, I'm paying not to have this. And the, and anyway, so I figured it out and fixed it. But the thing is now I'm making decisions. Like, I'm like, do I really need, how often do I watch Max? How often do I watch Disney? Yeah. How often do I watch Netflix? Yeah. Like, I don't know if I need any of those, because most of what I watch is on Apple TV and Prime and YouTube. You know, and there's enough on Netflix that it might make the cut, but I'm not sure if the other ones are gonna what's happening is that you're, by doing the ad thing, by not having ads for so long, you've conditioned a bunch of us to like, ads are not okay anymore. You know, like we don't have a pattern anymore.
Yeah.
So then what we'll do is we'll keep paying for what we want, but we're gonna just start killing the subscriptions, which at some point creates kind of a bit of a downward spiral.
Well, as a retiree on a fixed income, I don't want to watch ads, and I certainly am not going to record the stuff. Then I almost thought you were going to say edit out the ads.
No, nothing. That would take a lot of work.
No.
Although I'm sure you could do an AI thing that would just go through and take all the ads.
You use Opal. Channels, which is an app that will record from either your TV Anywhere stream, which if you've got like Fubo or something like that, there are streams that go with it for those channels, or your over the air antenna. I have that. I use that for some stuff, and it has channel. It has AI based commercial sense in it, and it auto skips the commercials.
Yeah. Six Colors says Plex the channels app too. Apple TV app is excellent. It's buttery smooth. Says Six Colors.
It is real good. It's real good.
So I buy this. I can run it on my Apple TV.
Well, you run the server on. You have to run the server on a device.
You have to run a server. Can I run a server?
I have it on my server.
What is your server? Can it run on an iPad or does it have to be a Mac? It has to be Mac.
No, it's got to be. It's got to be a computer to run the server. And then if you've got, if you can get over the air, you can attach an antenna and a little box that goes into it.
Right.
And like I said, some of your cable or over the top TV channels are also available via stream, and you can record those. Right. So, like, I record Jeopardy on that via stream, and then I watch it, and I never even have to pick up the remote because it auto skips the.
I do know, in fact, that the first break on Jeopardy is 3 minutes and 45 seconds. The second break is 2 minutes, and then there is a 2.5 minute break in the third break, and I know exactly how long to skip.
Amazing,
but it would be nice. So this reminds me a little bit of Silicon Dust's HD Home Run.
Works with that. In fact, if you plug an HD Home Run or anything like that into the server where Channels is, it'll also record over the air. And then you've got a DVR on your Apple TV or other boxes or iPad or iPhone or Mac or really wherever. Yeah. It's good stuff.
These also work with unlocked cable channels, so basically your local stations will come through ClearQuam, and I think the HD Home Run series, they have one that can actually use a cable card as well, so it can also technically record like Discovery and stuff like that. I've never been excited to like pay for Discovery or those other channels anyway, but yeah, it becomes a whole different thing.
It's a part of Max, Andy, and you get more for your money.
I said HBO Max is one of the few
Game of Thrones that kept... next to Dr. Pimple Popper. I got to tell you that there's a disjoint there somewhere.
Can also that be like really super disheartening to say that, well, you know what? We took one of the most beloved and rich with lore book series ever, and we saw the potential in this. And if anything, we decided to make this as the even better as a video. We spent millions of dollars. The actors are passionate about it. The cinematographers are passionate about it. And we're getting our butt kicked by somebody with a consumer video camera watching pimples being exploded.
But I will say
disheartening.
That, like, the one thing here is, like, when you have a paid service, like, the reason I'm getting rid of Max is because they started taking away their old shows.
Right.
Shows that were HBO shows.
There's an economic reason for them doing that, though, right? There's a tax reason.
I get it.
Yeah.
But I was like, I'm not like if you're going to take away the things that are part. It's one thing for when Netflix gets rid of something. I'm like, OK, well, the contract ended. When HBO gets rid of HBO content, mm-hmm. I was like, OK, this isn't worth having anymore. Like, I don't know why it was. I was just like mad. And that's why I'm getting rid of it. That's why I got rid of it. I actually got rid of it a while ago.
And the worst part is that when they're content that they produce for their own streaming service, and they pulled it off their own channel. They're not making it available to other streaming services. And also, they never made it available for sale through iTunes, through the Google Play Store, or through disc. It's like, this is when you feel like, you know what? I actually feel morally emboldened to seek out people who have basically put this up on pirate sites and grabbing it, because if you're not willing to take my money for this in any form, in any situation, what is the reason? What you're suddenly, I feel as though it honors the creators slightly to say that if I can't possibly give them any money for this, at least I can keep this alive. And this is why I have a Plex server. This is why I buy stuff on DVD and Blu-ray instead of like renting it or buying it digitally, so that I know that it will never go away from my server. If I ever want to see this movie, all I have to do is to go to this. As long as I keep this thing backed up, I will always have it. And that's important.
You've been very patient, boys and girls. It's time for the banking segment.
Hooray!
So,
money, money, money.
Goldman Sachs tired probably a year ago of being the Apple card. They've lost, they said, $1 billion on it. They don't make money on it. And the rumors were swirling that they were going to try to sell it to American Express, which is challenging because it's a MasterCard. So Mark Bloomberg says Apple's ideal credit card partner to replace Goldman Sachs is Chase, because it's already a MasterCard. He says Apple and Goldman are on the verge of splitting up. Now, he says it's the ideal partner. But does he know that they're close to a deal, or is this just his genius plan for them?
He's saying that it's ideal because they already have a relationship. They already have a relationship in like the retail type of consumer card. The deal with Goldman Sachs is the Wall Street Journal broke the story a few days ago that although Goldman Sachs has made no secret of the fact that, hey, Apple, we would really like to be done with this. And so Apple, according to an inside source, has basically made them an offer letter saying, here is a plan that would have you out by 12 to 14 months from now, but that would leave them now. How do you now serve the Apple card? And one of the things that the Wall Street Journal was talking about, not Mark Gurman, was that they could basically have it taken over by this company that basically runs all these store credit cards, which is not what Goldman Sachs was about. The Goldman Sachs play was about, we don't have a play in consumer credit space. We would like to enter that market, and we think that Apple will do for us what they did for AT&T all those years ago with the iPhone. And of course, it didn't work out that way. The big stumbling block, I mean, Chase is a good idea. I don't think it's a bad fit, speaking as a non-business reporter. But the thing is, the stumbling block has always been Apple wants it the way that they want it. And one of the biggest problems with the Goldman Sachs deal is that every single nitpicky, designy, customary sort of thing that they wanted to do that sounded like great as a blue sky sort of thing on the whiteboard made it a terrible, terrible business to try to run. Most famously, Apple's insistence that no, this thing about you don't know what day of the month your bill is due, that's anti-consumer. That makes things more difficult. Congratulations, your bill will come on the exact same day. Goldman's and every other credit company saying, yeah, we tried that. It was a disaster. That means that on the first of every month, all of our customer service people are absolutely overwhelmed because everybody is calling on the same day. The little things like that that were torpedoing this deal and not helping it seek into profit or not helping Goldman Sachs have the courage to say, you know what, we're going to stick with this because we think this is a good idea. So it's not. They might have Chase, but Chase might say, no, we don't want to be next up to be shot.
As Mark points out in the article, Chase had already turned them down. They went to Chase, American Express, and Citigroup before they went to Goldman. What puzzles me, and again, like you, Andy, I'm not a business reporter, is, I mean, Apple Savings has $10 billion in savings, including a couple thousand of mine. Isn't that the difference? A moneymaker?
Here's the difference between a few years ago and now is that now there's a track record. And so anybody, Chase, anyone else going into this is going to be able to see that. And Apple may be able to package together all of this stuff and say, now you can see what we're doing here. And that's a different kind of thing than the theoretical that they were negotiating.
It's the same thing
before
with the iPhone, right? Only they couldn't get anybody but Singular to take the iPhone. Now everybody wants it.
And now everybody wants it. Yeah. So this is weird. Mark Gurman, good reporter, writes this piece. Chase's name is in the headline, right? Yeah. And yet nowhere in it does he say anything other than, hey, you know what would be
a good idea?
Chase. So, I mean, maybe literally Bloomberg, a market moving pride, takes pride in moving markets company that reports on this stuff. Maybe he's just, you know, spitballing here and threw Chase's name out. I find that hard to believe. This feels to me like either somebody at Apple is like, Mark, mention Chase. We need to get their attention. Yeah. Or somebody at Chase is like, Mark, mention Chase.
Right.
We need Apple to think about us again because we might. Or he's heard something that he can't attribute.
Because this is not sourced. This is not I've been told.
Because there's
like
no source. But I have a hard time believing his idle speculation would appear in the headline of a story on Bloomberg, right? Because that's pretty. Then you're really trying to make something happen that way.
I think it could be he just thinks it's a good idea. Like Chase is the next one, and it's a pretty like he just may be filling lines like there, you know, for that week. I mean, it's I don't think it's necessarily a large leap. I think Apple's choice is Chase.
It's narrowing, isn't it? Yeah,
you know, like and I think that, you know, I think that the hard part for them, I think, is that they got rushed. You know, the what they had right now was giving them 5 years to figure this out, because I do think that I still think that there's some version of this that they stop using the banking company. There's no way they'll ever get to where they want to go using existing banking infrastructure. It's just that they needed it as a bridge of 5 years to figure it out, you know, 5 or 10 years to get to where they want to go. And now I think that the complaints about the partnership forced Apple to do something because it's bad branding for them. To have someone complaining about this is a horrible deal and blah, blah, blah. And I think they're like, okay, if you don't want us, we'll leave.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's fine. But they obviously took some time. This isn't the first time people have complained. They obviously took a little bit of time to, think about, like, obviously Apple has a plan. They didn't say Apple's not the type of company that says we're going to leave in a year, 2 year and a half without knowing how they're going to get from A to B. So and they're not going to close it up. So I'm sure that they're already in talks with somebody to do it for themselves.
That is a point. I think Goldman Sachs' deal with Apple was for like 20 years, and they kind of recently renewed it. Or I could have the numbers wrong, but it's not as though they were on.
I think they were on a 5 year clip a couple years left.
I was reading up, and I could be wrong, but I think that there was something a few months ago where they're trying to sort of indicate that, hey, yeah, I know that we're having problems, but hey, don't think that your Apple credit card is going away anytime soon. And it was somewhat long of that, but when you get quotes from inside Goldman Sachs of the severity you were getting, this is not a disgruntled soon to be former employee. This was messaging from, I think, inside the company where they wanted to make sure it was known that we are not happy with this deal. Not only we're not making money, but we don't see a path to profitability. We are bleeding money from this.
And also, it's not like the Goldman Sachs was really the prestige consumer. Really, I mean, were asking them to do something they already weren't very. They already didn't know really how to do as well as other consumer credit card companies. So they're not the top of the line. Apple didn't get the top of the line. Apple got who was willing to say yes, which is what Apple needed. So they got that. And they've now proven that there's a bunch of people that want to do this, and there's a bunch of money floating around. Apple's leverage is much better now than it was before. You know, and so I think that other banks.
Sorry, I apologize. I should be quiet. I'm sorry.
When a minor league player is complaining about not being able to hit the pitches, there's major league players that are going to look at it and go, well, I might be able to hit that pitch. You know, because Goldman Sachs was a minor league player in consumer credit. You know, and so the thing is that they
weren't even a player. This is their
right.
first
so I'm
foray.
Just saying, into they're not. So yeah, they don't know yeah. how they don't. So you're so Apple now having a, you know, sure that they're complaining about all these things, but there's other credit card companies that are far more resourced and better at what they do than Goldman Sachs. They're going to look at this and figure out if they can fit into that box because it's money. There's money there. And so they may say, no, we're not going to do that. But the fact that Goldman Sachs couldn't figure out that box doesn't mean that nobody can figure out that box.
I agree with that. But one of the things I think is a really critical factor here is that Goldman Sachs agreed to this deal because, again, just like AT&T, formerly Singular in 2005, 2006, they were eager. They were not a major player. They figured that this is their ticket to enter to basically become competitive again in mobile, where they dropped the ball earlier. Goldman Sachs saw this as an opportunity to get into consumer credit, which other companies have proven is a very, very valuable market to get into. And so they were willing to agree to a whole bunch of stuff that they were not the first people that talked to Apple about this. They were the ones that were able to agree to the stuff that Apple was doing because, again, they knew that they were launching a brand new business. They were willing to deal with a very, very long runway to profitability if this would get them into this business. Now, I think that you flip this on the other end of it, where if they are going to talk to another player, like an existing player like Chase is going to say, okay, now this, it's like you're buying a company, say, okay, you have your son and daughter each taking $20 million a year as executive salary. That's not happening. We're not going to do this deal unless we get rid of that. I think that company will have the ability to say, we are not going to agree to this. We are not going to agree to that. That is a poison pill. We are not going to deal with that. We are going to retain the ability to change this. We are not necessarily going to take subprime, we're not going to let you put us into the subprime lending business, like you did with Goldman Sachs. And I think that Apple might have to not necessarily go hat in hand, but at least be able to they might be forced to negotiate on something of a more even level, where they're saying, you can ask for this, we can try it, we can make that sort of a goal, but our first job, if we're going to take you on as a partner, Apple, is that we're going to have to make this into a non bloodletting loss proposition, and we don't see that happening if we accept A, B, C, and D that you seem to be insisting on.
So it's really an interesting story, because absolutely a success from Apple's point of view. Pay, the savings account, everything's working great from Apple's point of view. So they just have to find a partner. Or, by the way, Gurman points out, could be partners. They could sell off the savings, for instance, to a number of banks. There's lots of ways to slice this. But it's bizarre that it's so successful and yet a big money loser for Goldman. It's just
you take the part of the business that profits you as a company, which is, hey, this helps us to sell a lot
Apple's
more computers
good at, that, aren't they?
At huge markup. And people buy now as opposed to deferring it to later. And meanwhile, the people who are shoveling coal in the engine room have to shovel faster and use smaller shovels. And I think that's really the perspective. Yeah. But and also not that I'm totally negative about this, realize that Apple consumers are incredibly valued. So that if you have, say, here's a card in which everybody is part of this subset of the consumer marketplace that has a lot of money, a lot of education. They are the people who say, no, I don't want the eau de toilette. I want the eau de cologne. No. As a matter of fact, give me the parfum. Give me the expensive top shelf stuff. And that is valuable, too. But I don't think that this is where Apple can simply name their terms and people are lining up to jump in it. That's all.
Again, I just think it depends on the structure of the individual organization. You look at, a good example within the world that I live in is Blackmagic. Blackmagic buys companies that basically have a bad business model but good technology. And, you know, so they bought Teranex. Teranex is incredible technology that was losing money hand over fist. And then they restructured it. They make more, I bet you they make more a week from the Teranex technology than Teranex made a year. You know, like they, you know, the profit. By selling the Teranexes at 1/20 what they used to cost, you know. So the thing is that they lowered the price painfully low, and they are still making more money on it than Teranex ever made, because they had a much more efficient structure than what Teranex had to do it. So Goldman Sachs did not have a very I don't buy that nobody can do it. I buy that Goldman Sachs doesn't know how to do it. You know, like, because this is the first time they had done it. So I think it'll be interesting to see whether that, and Apple, of course, is big enough. You look at like a Capital One. Capital One is something Apple could buy in cash if it wanted to, you know, like, or invest in them or whatever. You know, there's a lot of different ways of structuring this in a way that works for Apple. So I think that they wouldn't have announced the timeline unless they already had a solution. So I think we'll just see it roll out, whatever that looks like.
Well, thank you for that insightful business discussion.
And thanks.
We know that's why people tune in MacBreak Weekly for the latest
work.
Business.
And if I may simply wrap up, my advice is to buy low and then sell high.
Brilliant.
Plastics. Oh, plastics.
You didn't hear it from either.
Alex, you got anything? We got plastics, buy low, sell high.
Volume.
Volume.
Got,
make it up in volume.
Got a quarter. Yeah, you've got a quarter. We've got two dimes and a nickel. So.
Our show brought to you by Zip. More of this wonderful, wonderful repartee still to come. Brought to you by Zip Recruiter. It's a wonderful life. It is. Christmas Story.
Yep.
Shoot your eye out. Elf. Give me a line from Elf. I don't know.
Oh, huh? My God, it's Santa. I know Santa.
National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. Got a line from that? Plug in the lights, Chevy. These are holiday classics. And to make them right, it took a team of talented people. Not just the people on the screen, the actors, but editors, props people, the sound crew. Alex knows this very well. It's about the team. Same thing for Twit. And when it comes to building a team, whether it's for the entertainment industry or any industry, you need to hire the right people. Best way to do that? With ZipRecruiter. And right now you can try it free at ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. We love ZipRecruiter. It's how we hire. ZipRecruiter helps you round up the best people, the brightest team, using a variety of techniques like their powerful matching technology that ZipRecruiter uses to find qualified people for a wide range of roles. Once they find those people, they send you their names. You invite them to apply. Or if you see a top candidate you're interested in, ZipRecruiter makes it easy to send them a personal invitation, which encourages them to apply. And yeah, you know what? People are flattered. That pops you right to the top of the list for jobs. And these days, the best people get many offers. You want to be the top of those offers. You can also use attention-grabbing labels. ZipRecruiter offers labels for your job posts that speak to, you know, things that people want. Flexibility, remote work. Training provided that helps you get the eyes of the candidates you really want. Make your hiring a little merrier with ZipRecruiter. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. For us, it's often within just a couple of hours. All you have to do to try it for free is go to our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. That's important. Make sure you use that so that you get the free deal and they know you saw it here. ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Den Moss in the chat room has some financial advice. Compound interest. The magic, the miracle, frankly, of compound interest.
Yes. You are correct, sir.
And here's our elf quote for the day from Jason Snell. The yellow ones don't stop.
The yellow ones don't stop. They don't stop. That movie's got lots of great lines in it, but that is the one that makes us laugh out loud every time. It's his New York City tip. The yellow ones don't stop.
It's true. It's funny because it's true. Right?
Yeah.
I even started liking that movie more when I read like a recentish interview with Bob Newhart that he's telling his side of, I got this script and I immediately told my wife, this could be like the next holiday classic. If I do not get this job, I'm going to be really disappointed because this is one of those movies that will just go forever and I'm perfect for it.
And what's funny is I was like, and you can imagine it. I mean, he was so perfect. Like, he was so perfect.
Because he's tall. Yeah. He's a lanky, lean streak of bacon, which makes it funny.
But also he's like the sort of like, yeah, the fact that like that guy, like as a tiny little elf, and he could just deadpan act as though that is completely normal and completely okay. Right. There's nothing odd about
this. Because he's innocent. He has that innocence, which really works very well in that show. I think if you could make a holiday movie or a holiday song, it's like an annuity, right? If it's a success, people are going to, unlike any other kind of movie, watch it.
Isn't that a plot of About a Boy, I think, is that his dad wrote a Christmas number one in the UK, and so he has money forever.
Right. That's awesome. The barking dogs.
That's why you wonder why did these bands do all these Christmas albums? Holy smokes. It pays for most of the Christmas tunes pay more than just about anything else you can do as ongoing for a long term. Yeah.
Virgil's given us a quote from Die Hard. Come out to the coast. We'll get together. Have a few laughs.
Ho, ho, ho. Now I have a machine
yippee
gun.
Yippee-ki-yay. You know who.
Mr. Santa.
Mr. Santa. We have a, we did this last year. Kind of, it wasn't a Christmas party. We had a Christmas get together at our local place called Brewster's. If you've been Brewster's, Jason, it's outdoors. Mm. But for Christmas, they decorate it to the hilt and they have holiday drinks, including one that comes in a Santa mug, which I bought, called Yippee-ki-yay, mofo. And it's nice. Hysterical. They're all Santa-named drinks. It's a lot of fun. You know what? If you come up again, Jason, I'll take you to Brewster's. Here's an annoying story. So this company, Bending Spoons, which is, an Irish company?
Italy.
That's where they're Italian. Yeah. A terrible name. Buying up stuff. They bought Filmic Pro. And then in November last month, laid off all 22 members of the Filmic team, including the founder.
Well, I think the founder. Yeah, I think the founder might have left earlier. But the
Filmic's founder and CEO Neil Barham's LinkedIn shows he concluded his time at the company. That's a nice use of euphemism.
Well, he did that in November.
In November. Yeah, well,
the layoff happened.
In November. All of this was in November, last month.
All of the layoffs?
Yeah, that's what it says. This is from, this is a Petapixel article, and Filmic responded to it on the 4th saying, from Bending Spoons, I can confirm that a layoff performed in November, so all 22 members depart. Okay. So I think it probably happened roughly the same time.
There was a bunch of things that happened. I mean, it's a really interesting case study in that Filmic basically got to the point where they were the standard for shooting film. Yeah. You know, they were the standard
you
for
recommended it. Was a shooting pick. Yeah.
It was a pick, and we've talked about it. We've had them on Office Hours.
They
were bought by Bending Spoons.
Yeah.
Okay. When they bought, I don't have any inside information. I just know we're big fans of what they were working on. But when Bending Spoons bought them, of course, they added a subscription, which made a lot of people really upset.
Right.
So a lot of people got upset about the fact that they now have to pay a subscription to something they were used to just paying for. And that was Bending Spoons' model, and they moved to that. And you had a lot of people that either dropped their subscription or they kept going, but were kind of begrudgingly moving forward. I have a feeling that especially after the behind the scenes came out from, some of the stuff that was there with the Blackmagic camera. But once the Blackmagic camera came out, it's about four times as capable as Filmic Pro for, nothing. It's free. And I have a feeling that they saw a huge drop. I don't think that they just decided they were going to do this 6 months ago or a year ago. I think that they saw the Blackmagic camera. They saw that there was no way that they were going to ever be able to invest what they needed to invest to compete with that camera. And I think that they, just are trying to stem the bleeding, because it's going to be, because their subscription model doesn't make sense when a company is giving it. If Blackmagic was charging the same amount as they are, maybe you can keep it going. But if they're charging nothing for something and giving people, I use it every day now, and it is a very superior product to what Filmic had.
Well, there you go.
I don't think there's any button in Filmic that I feel like I'm missing in the Blackmagic camera, and then there's 10 other buttons that I want. And so I think that's the situation that they got into, is that there's, I couldn't believe that what Blackmagic came out of nowhere to have that many features. They've obviously been working on that for a year, and so it's was interesting. So I put them in a vice that I don't think they could figure out a way out of. And I think that they're probably going to use some of the technology for some of their other apps. But I think that it was specifically the 15 combined with the Blackmagic camera that just annihilated that company pretty quickly, along with the subscription service, the change of the business model. They changed the business model. People aren't happy about it. People don't feel connected to the company anymore. They're just mad. You end up in a situation where you're now like, if you can survive 2 or 3 years of that, you might be able to get to a point where it settles back down again. They just didn't have enough time and people were still feisty about the
They made it subscription immediately.
Yeah, and everyone was upset about it.
September,
everyone's like, where do I go? Yeah. And everyone would say, like, we've got questions in office hours. Where do we go now that we don't want to use Filmic Pro? And I'm like, nowhere. Like I was still subscribing because I was like, there's nowhere to go.
Well, it wasn't that much. It was $40 a year. We're not talking hundreds of dollars.
Yeah, but everyone was paying like $15 before once, you know, $15 or $20 once. Right. And so the thing is that there was nowhere to go. They had the best app out there for what they did. And then the problem was something else came out better that was free, you know, and you know, you don't want to. 22 people is not
hard to beat that price.
Blackmagic.
Yeah.
Well, it's also it's not just the price.
It was good.
It's the price. It's that it's better than your app. It's free, and it's released by a company that has, you know, you do not want like a iPhone company making, you know, this app does not want to go head to head with Blackmagic. You know, like it's just not like that's not gonna.
Yeah. So in your opinion, the Blackmagic app is everything Filmic Pro was and more.
Oh, way more.
Yeah. So, bye bye. See you, Bending Spoons.
Yeah. I mean, it's good job. Yeah. It's a great app.
Now, what about Kino? Yesterday, the folks who do Halide announced their video app, Kino. Now, it's not out yet, right?
Did they show much of it? Right. They didn't. They just said that they're building it and they're actually. Their co-founder is having a baby in the new year. So he's like, we got to do this now because in, you know, March or whatever, we're gone. Having a baby. And I'm going to be gone. So we're going to try to ship it because they usually, what he says in the video is they usually just announce it like Apple does and say, oh, here it is. And they're like, we're not going to do that this time. We're going to sort of show it as we go and we're going to figure it out. But like everybody really likes their still app because it is bringing a lot of great still photography stuff to an iPhone camera. And I would imagine that this will be something, it'll be interesting to see where it fits in, given what Alex just said about the Blackmagic app. But they do a really good job of UI design and they seem to know what their customers want. And so I'm interested to see what Kino will end up being. I wonder if it'll be more like, not for video pros, but maybe for photographers, their core audience who want to shoot some video too. I don't know. I don't know if Alex has some thoughts about, are they wise to even go down this path given what Blackmagic is giving away?
If they build something that is, there's always room for something that is imaginative that serves a certain portion of the market very effectively. Like, for instance, I even think that the Apple app has gotten too complicated. Like there's too many little buttons on the Apple app. I need something that I can just open. I use it, but when I open it up and want to shoot something, I want actually less buttons than what Apple gives me to do that. And so I think that there's an opportunity there to do something that's very specialized that they might be able to do well. Nobody can go after the I want to shoot films on my phone market. Like that market is, I mean, Apple was using the Blackmagic software.
Right.
So like, you know, like at some point you're like, well, there. I don't think that, I mean, if there'd be a market there, in the I want to shoot films, if Blackmagic was charging a subscription, which Grant hates, or if they were charging $20 to buy it, there's a market at $10, you know, to do it at $0. There just isn't a market here anymore to do anything, you know. And the problem is, if you do anything that's remotely better than what Blackmagic does, they've got hundreds of engineers. They'll just point at you, you know, and just add those things to their, you know, if they think it's valid. So if you're doing something very creative, if Hala, and by the way, I love their still app, you know, like I've used it since it came out, recommended it on the show, I think. So I think that the Halide still app is still very valid. And I think it could do really well. When I saw this, there were two things. One is I couldn't understand why that video was so underexposed.
Right.
So I was like,
that's not a good sign.
App,
yeah.
Doing a video.
He is kind of dark.
It's a great video, yeah. But it's like, they must have made some decision about that, but it was really dark. So anyway, so I was kind of like, I don't understand.
That's moody, dude. That's what we call moody.
So that was my number one thing. But number two was that if they're doing something really creative that solves a simple thing elegantly, I think there's still a market for them. I think if they are trying to do filmmaking on a phone, they're probably not going down the wrong path.
I guess there's room for an app that's dead easy, dead simple.
Well, or but specific.
Is Apple's app not dead easy and dead simple?
I find it too fiddly. Like, I can get myself into a place where it's taking video in a format that I don't want it to take.
It'd be kind of cool if you just could launch the app, press the red button, and go. So yeah, maybe that's what they're going to do.
Yeah, and I've gotten better at it with the Apple app, but I have found myself capturing stuff in weird states because it had so many little options in it. Like, there's something that I do where I get into it and it like doesn't give me all the options later. And anyway, so and that's when I started thinking there's too many buttons now in the phone app. But I think that, so I think Halide has until we see what it does, like a really, really dedicated, amazing HDR app that's really simple, but has scopes and all kinds of other things. That would be something that would, if it was specialized, could be better than the Blackmagic app, but it really depends on what you're doing.
All right. He didn't say when, but it's before the baby.
Like before the baby comes. Yeah.
Oh, dude, you have no idea. No idea.
Delegation. Delegation. That's all I have to say. It's important.
Yeah. If you want to watch the movie Shot with Kino, KINO.com. I mean, I think they get a lot of leeway because Halide is so great. And they're so smart. I mean, I read their article every year when the new iPhone comes out about the camera, and they know more than anybody. They're really great. So I'll give them credit. Now, maybe they could explain the wedding dress picture.
blue with gold until the day I die, Leo.
So comedian Tessa Coates posted this on Instagram. And she's standing in one of those, double mirrors so she could see the sides and the front and the back. But in each of the different parts, she's got her hands in a different place. There's three different poses in one picture. She swears this is not edited. This is what happened. Did the computational photography take over? What's going on in this picture? Well, according to 9 to 5 Mac and Farouk from iPhoneDo, an excellent YouTube channel, says 9 to 5 Mac, we now know she had she took a panorama by accident.
Yeah. Or the person taking a picture of her, right?
Oh yeah. She's not the photographer. Yeah.
Yeah. The panorama, cause somebody was pointing out that although this is a really great idea to educate people about computational photography, the fact is that the iPhone takes multiple frames, but it does it in a fraction of a second.
Yeah. You couldn't move your arms fast enough. Yeah.
And people were like, well, but it isn't a panorama, but Apple actually Apple calls something a panorama not based on where it was shot, but based on the aspect ratio of the final photo. And so if you do a very small panorama, it won't be marked as a panorama.
Right.
And this is a case here where Apple is probably doing the dividing line based on, since it's a person moving, they're going to want to keep the whole person unedited. So, and do the dividing line in between the people. And so they've auto-stitched together this panorama of a person who's been moving, and so she's in three different poses, it is the most reasonable explanation for why you got this effect.
Yeah. Also, when people started looking at when this debate really started raging, they started looking at like the EXIF information on the image. They saw that is the size of a photo that would be generated by panorama mode and other stuff that face. And also, unless we are willing to say that, this comedian decided that the best way to get likes was to laboriously Photoshop a wedding video in some fraudulent idea to prey upon people's fears of computational photography, maybe that wasn't the reason to begin with.
Although I will say that would be about, I don't know if it'd be laborious. that would take about 10 minutes.
For the goal that you would assume that, well, why would they want to do that? Oh, right. Maybe become a viral sensation. Yeah, but I think that's very, really important because as computation, as people are starting to learn that computational photography is a thing, that it's not a lens shutter opens, it exposes a frame of light onto a frame of film, and or it exposes a light onto a sensor, and that's the picture you get. People are learning that, no, there's a computer that basically decides to turns a pile of numbers into a picture. It can cause people to think that, oh, well, geez, well, there's a potential for fraud here, because it's not the person who's trying to Photoshop this photo and make you think that this is wrong. It's actually the algorithm itself. And we just saw, was it last year or the year before, some defense attorney tried to sort of subvert a photo that was entered into evidence on a projector in the court in front of the jury by saying, oh, well, the prosecutor cleverly stretch the photo, like using the pinch and the stretch gestures to make it look bigger. But we all know that adds details that were never there before. And there had this big argument about, no, that's totally not how that works on the iPad. It just simply magnifies what's there. It doesn't add more pixels. And if we have this situation where people can start and say, well, the thing is, I have a picture of this person with a weapon in their hand. I think that maybe yes, I know it looks like a gun, but I think that the computer algorithm saw something blurry that it turned into a gun that wasn't actually there. It was actually a submarine sandwich wrapped in foil. Like, no, that's not what this camera does. It doesn't create a gun where there was not one before. But we're going to start to see that as a lot of these AI features become not part of the editing suite, but actually part of the actual built-in camera software.
Submarine sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
We got a break for lunch. Did you? You said last week, Jason, you went through the App Store awards, or did you?
Yeah, not? I don't think we. I think we maybe not the winners, but we because that was
because
yeah,
they teased
that
the
dropped,
finalists.
I think the next.
Yeah, the winners
I think
came
that
out
dropped
the next day.
Yeah. The next day. Yeah.
So we'll quickly run through these. There's a lot, but. The app of the year, All Trails, which is interesting. I've been using that. It's a great way to find hiking trails.
Yeah.
I really like it. It's a subscription.
You have no idea that there are these like nature reserves and like public trails. You think that, oh, well, there's a dirt road that I pass by on my way to Walgreens. Like, no, actually, if you were to go 50 yards in there, you would actually find yourself in a really great trail system that the town set up in 2003 and very few people know about.
Yeah. Nice job. All Trails. It's kind of it's not what you would think of as the app of the year, but you know, good going. Finalists were Duolingo and Flighty, which of course anybody who travels knows about Flighty.
Flighty.
For that. It's awesome.
So good.
Yeah. In fact, it was a pick on iOS today, I think last week or the week before. I'd never heard of this, but then I don't wear makeup. Prêt-à-Makeup is the iPad app of the year. DaVinci Resolve was a runner up. As was something called Concepts. The Mac app of the year, I think, you know, there were a lot of great apps, but Photomator, which was new to the Mac this year from the Pixelmator team, is a really great app. I use that a lot. I don't know Linearity Curve Graphic Design or Portal, the runners up, but there are. It's got to be hard for Apple because, you know, I mean, everybody kind of knows the big apps. So to find something new and different is neat. Smart Gym was the Apple Watch app of the year, gym and home workouts. And that's an individual developer, Mateos Abras. That's cool. Planny and Tide Guide were the runners up. Apple TV app of the year, Mubi. Stream great cinema. Jason, do you know Mubi?
That's one of those, it's a streamer app.
Okay. Yeah. Good. It did beat out the very popular Bug Snacks. And Fit On Workouts and Fitness Plans. Game of the Year, Honkai Star Rail. I don't, you know, when I see anime in the icon, I really pretty much go move on. I don't stop, but fine, that's me. After Place, Vampire Survivors, the finalist. iPad Game of the Year, Lost in Play. Mac Game of the Year, Lies of P. This is actually a AAA title. I have not played on the... on the Mac. I've played it on Xbox, but I'm glad to hear it's on the Mac. And I'm also glad to hear that Return to Monkey Island is still in there, one of the finalists. So, and then they had a bunch for cultural impact, which I think is great, helping us care for ourselves and loved ones. I'll let you look at those. Arcade Game of the Year, Hello Kitty Island Adventure. Thank you very much. And Apple's Trend of the Year, Generative AI. Oh, you think, Apple? Really? Trend of the Year, huh? Okay, okay. Thank you, Apple, for the App Store Awards.
Yeah.
I don't know how they decide those at all.
Yeah, exactly. It's like it used to be, it seemed very, very clear that they wanted to promote certain aspects of what's possible on the iPhone. Hey, look, they just created this new rendering engine, or hey, look, there's a new feature of the iPad. Here is, we're going to pick as app of the year something that points out how good our hardware is or how good our operating system is. I don't think that's quite true today because it doesn't seem quite so obvious. But I would love to see. I mean, the problem with the last week we talked about the like book of the year, like recording artist of the year. Hey, wow, Taylor Swift!
What a shocker!
Glad to see someone give her a shot in the arm. Yeah. I don't know how they pick these winners, but it's good to give them a chance to. People are going to find out what the top five selling apps in any category are anyway. Isn't it great to find something that could actually use the boost? That is as worthy as pretty much anything else that's making $500,000 a year for its developers. And I think I would love it if that were kind of the priority of these winners.
And once again, I'm sorry to say, Apple did not pick MacBreak Weekly is the podcast of the year. They've got this unknown Julia Louis-Dreyfus and her podcast, Wiser Than Me from Lemonada Media. So congratulations. I'm sure she'll have a wonderful future ahead of her. Wiser Than Me, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, the podcast of the year. And, you know, she brings in unknowns like Jane Fonda as her guest. So it's great. She's really sharing the limelight, you know. That was a season one, episode one was Jane Fonda. A nice way to come out of the box, right? You know?
Yeah.
Apple announced it will be the first and largest customer of the new Amcor manufacturing and packaging facility in Peoria, Arizona.
Yeah.
Peoria.
Spring training site, actually.
Oh, is it really?
Right? Isn't that? Somebody plays in Peoria. It's way out there.
Yeah.
Padres, maybe? I don't know. It's way out there. This is interesting because remember that there was that story that TSMC was going to make chips for Apple, not the cutting edge, but chips for Apple in their new plant that because of the CHIPS Act,
so-called there's a lot of legacy government
money
node.
Involved.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. It's a legacy node, but still making chips in the U.S. where it's a challenge. They to make chips cutting edge or even close to that in the U.S. So, okay, they're going to make them there. And then there were stories about how, well, they're going to make them there, but then they're going to ship them back to Taiwan to be packaged. And this story suggests that perhaps that won't have to happen because this is an Arizona-based company that does chip packaging.
It's right next door to the TSMC fab.
It's in the Phoenix area, so they can actually do both here in the U.S. And again, is it sort of performative and sort of political? Yeah, that's true. But they're also trying to create the beginnings of a chip infrastructure in the U.S. so that they can grow that over time. And there's a lot of complexity of politics involved here, but this is an interesting extension to that story where they may be able to get a whole package out, which even if it's got little bits of it that are not made in the U.S., they are going to be able to say, you know, it was the package was in the U.S. and then they'll ship the little, you know, the actual package to China, presumably for assembly. But it's like it's another step along the way.
Yeah. Apple has committed $430 billion. Over 5 years investing in the U.S. economy, and they're on pace. This helps them do it. Amcor is going to put in $2 billion, and it will employ more than 2,000 people. I think it's more than performative. I think that sounds like the real deal.
Yeah. It helps also politically. It helps a lot of people here, not just Apple. Basically, to be able to they can't just simply come out with a press release about, oh, well, the App Store pays over $1 trillion a year into the economy. That's nice, but it's nice to when you're trying to defend yourself as we are a $2 trillion company bordering on a $3 trillion company at times. No, but we are giving a lot more than we're taking. Hey, look, we just created 2,000 jobs that didn't exist anymore. Hey, look, we just put $2 billion into this region that didn't exist before. It's also really helpful because this is one of the most important policy platforms that the Biden administration has is technology investment, less reliance on China manufacturing. And as a matter of fact, just a week or two before they announced, in addition to like the $30 or $40 billion that they're creating in initiatives for manufacturing general and technology, like $3 billion specifically for packaging. So Apple is also, I'm sure they're not doing this to help out Biden, but this also will give them a certain amount of political capital that, hey, look, we're, it's one thing for the White House to propose something. It's one thing for them to create funding for something. But now, but in the coming run up to the next election, they can point to, and because we passed these, because we helped out major industry, look at all the jobs that have been created here. Hey, look at all the jobs that we're keeping, that we're basically not just keeping in America, but we're actually taking away from China. Give us another 4 years and we'll do even better.
Yeah, and for Apple, feeling pressure from all fronts to be able to say, just as they did, you know, when Donald Trump went to the Mac Pro assembly factory, right? This is part of Apple's, like, we know we build a lot of things in China, but look, we're going to demonstrate some amount. And that's why they do their press release about how many app developers there are in the U.S. economy and all those things. So this is part of, like I said, a political game kind of all the way around. But there is a tangible thing here, which is they're going to make some chips and package them in the U.S. That's going to happen.
But as Leo said, like I honestly think that this is, I don't think Tim Cook has had a lot of lows as CEO. One of them, though, was definitely being part of that dog and pony show with Trump at that plant, basically just being this monkey at his side. I thought that's how he came across. Also, for a thing that, okay, technically we have a plant here, technically we're doing some work here, we don't really have to do it here, it's not really a long-term investment, but yes, we can say that by Webster's dictionary we are assembling things. We are assembling Macs here in the United States of America. If you order the right build to order thing, it might very well come out of, it might have some tobacco juice at the bottom of the box. Whereas this announcement is, no, even this is a long-term investment. As with anything, it could work out, it could not work out. But for Apple to pull the plug on this would be tantamount to us pointing to this later on saying, no, that was an abject lie. So I don't think that that's what's going on here. I think that this is, hey, we have an opportunity here thanks to some of these incentives that we're getting from the Biden administration. We're going to take advantage of it. We think that this is a good idea, and we don't think it'll hurt us in the long run, so we're in.
Big get for Katie Tarasoff of CNBC, first journalist to be invited into Apple's super secret Silicon Lab. She also interviewed on CNBC Johnny Cerugi, among others. I think John Ternus as well. I didn't see it. Have you seen it? Anybody? You want to comment on it?
I did see it. It was most, and I did read, like, CNBC had a very long write-up about it.
Right.
It was largely a puff piece and nothing that we don't know already. Like, hey, Apple's made this big turn into Apple's, into their own CPUs. Hey, look, they're being the first to create a 3-nanometer process in a mass market device. And hey, look, they're trying to control the whole widget from start to finish. There was some interesting, I thought it was interesting. As always, like, why, if Apple has never given access to this before, why are they choosing to give access to it right now? And that could be part of it, could be part of this recent announcement about investment in packaging and chip fab here in the United States. This is not a person that Apple has put in front of a reporter before. CNBC doesn't really, I can't remember the last time they got this kind of access before, and I can't remember any time where anybody got to look at least a walkthrough through this facility before. And of course, we know that there was like two. Either they built like a sound stage a replica of the chip of the chip development lab, or they actually said, okay, for the next 10 days, here are the things that we are not going to be keeping in an open view. Even the coffee mug has a congratulations on meeting this deadline on the modem chip sort of thing, but. Nonetheless, it is interesting that even if it is propaganda, it's interesting. Why did they choose this propaganda, and why did they choose to release it in this form and right now? He was asked the one question that he seemed to be like, kind of like not upset about, but like, hey, I understand that you're also working on modem chips, so you don't have to rely on Qualcomm with Apple Silicon. And he sort of tersely said, after like, he doesn't, we don't talk about unannounced products.
We don't like to.
Yeah, this is an area of interest. This is an area that we're very interested in, and we will consider to prove. Oh God, oh God, oh God.
She had no idea what a can of worms she was opening with that question. I don't think it's an accident that it was a financial news network. I mean, that sounds like Apple puffing up their stock a little bit, frankly. You know, that's simple enough.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't give us access. We couldn't help their stock price. Beeper is out officially. You even get a blue bubble. This is an app. Actually, I think
Beeper Mini specifically.
Yeah. Beeper Mini. Yeah. Brand new.
What is Beeper Mini?
They pre-briefed The Verge and Quinn Nelson at Snazzy Labs YouTube channel about this. And they're so really good video and a really good story about it. This is based on an open source project that they bought that they're keeping open source.
16-year-old kids.
Yeah, open source project. Python.
This is not just another, hey, look, someone thinks that they figured out how to let Androids send messages through iMessage.
By setting up a Mac virtual machine in a data center that anybody can read.
Are they still doing that?
No, this is not that. This 16-year-old says that, and according to the company, reverse engineered iMessage. They recreated all the code with a jailbroken, again, according to interviews they've given to The Verge and one other person, like they reverse engineered the entire thing. There is no middleman. There is no middle server. There's no translation. Your Android phone is simply sending and receiving iMessages using the iMessage protocol, including end-to-end encryption, including group chat features, including high definition everything. You even get a blue bubble. Your friends, this is not just in The Verge, but I also, from another couple people I know that got early access to it, like their first reaction from friends is, did you switch to an iPhone? Why are you now a blue bubble? Or has someone, is this now not you anymore? So it will remain to be seen, it's a $2 service, $2 monthly service, and they're thinking about adding extra services as they go.
I'm just going to say
it's a separate app.
Do not buy a one-year subscription.
Stick to the monthly subscription. Apple might, the question is, like, is Apple going to quash this like a bug? Secondly, is this why Apple, of course, had to know that this was in the works? Maybe this is why they finally caved on RCS, because they said we can make this irrelevant if we simply add those features to the basic iMessage app.
This must be a shock for Apple, and I have a feeling there will be an update pretty damn quick.
Okay, so, and I highly recommend Quinn Nelson's video. It's really good. He goes into a lot of technical detail. According to Beeper and according to Quinn's video, here's the thing. They are using Apple's device registration system to register an Apple ID as part of the system and get back credentials, which are then generate a certificate. This is the same system that every other device uses. So their feeling is, and we'll see if there's some hitch here, but their feeling is that Apple actually can't shut this off because they would have to completely re-architect how devices authenticate with Apple IDs. Yeah. So they feel like they actually have they're using Apple's system. Also, you might say, well, if Apple has technical limitations here, what about legal ramifications? There's a carve out for exactly this, for reverse engineering a system like this without using their code. It's actually legal under the DMCA.
Is it?
So
because they're reverse engineering.
There is a specific call out for reverse engineering closed systems like this.
So it's legal.
In the DMCA. So Beeper says, and you know, Beeper says that it's going to be hard, not never say never. And we don't know, like, we can't see their code. We can only see the Python code that's open source. But it seems like this is going to be harder for Apple to address unless Apple has a new authentication system waiting in the wings that they're ready to just slide on in, or that it might take time, or there's something that they haven't accounted for allow them to disrupt this, but not everybody else. Because see, that's the trick here is if Apple's recourse is to break a certain thing or change a certain thing, the danger is they're going to break their own legitimate customers' products, and they can't do that. Yeah. So we'll see. I would also probably not invest a long-term amount of money in the Beeper Mini app, but it is clever how they did it, and the fact that it's even, you know, the proof of concept is open sourced shows that they're not trying to like hide a bug in Apple's system here. They're literally just logging into Apple's system and then using iMessage.
Yeah. I'm very interested. I will install it on my Pixel as soon as I get home.
And just to make it clear to people, you don't need an Apple ID. You install the app. It will go into your messages with your permissage. Find anything that's basically being sent via iMessage. Bring that into this separate app that it is. And suddenly, all of those incoming iMessages go directly.
You'll
to
the two-factor pop up on your Apple device saying, "Hey, somebody's trying to log in. You enter the 6 digits. It looks exactly like you're logging in from another iPhone."
Yeah. This, is, this looks, I mean, it looks like everything you would want for this feature to happen. Yeah. And as Jason says, it might be so difficult for Apple to shut this out that they're probably having discussions right now about how if this really is a surprise to them, is like, how much is this going to hurt us really, that there is this extra service that is not built in as a default on any of these other platforms or operating systems. Of course, if they were to cut a deal with Samsung and say, oh, by the way, Beeper Mini we're integrating that technology into the messaging app, like, then that could be like,
I'll tell you what the exact calculus,
at least the hounds of war.
The exact calculus at this point from Apple is, A, can we do it technically? And you might be right, they can't, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's ways to do it technically. B, what's the political cost of doing this? Because that really is monopolistic behavior as soon as you do it.
Good point.
Right? And that's part of the card game that that Beeper is playing here is, do you want to be seen as trying via legal recourse, via technical recourse, to crush somebody who's just trying to bring iMessage and serve another platform? Let's add to it. I think there's a psychology at Apple that comes from Steve Jobs, which is they hate watching other people make money on their stuff. So the fact that Beeper is charging for this, I think that it will infuriate them too.
I guarantee you.
What's the recourse?
There's people running around the campus going crazy. And there's engineers who have been tasked to figure out how to stop this. Yeah. But the third thing is, how many people are using this? I don't know if there's a way for them to know that. They may not be able to tell. But what is the cost to us of this happening? And given the political cost of fighting it, if not that many people use it, I don't think they're going to say, well, we're just going to, it's de minimis, we're going to let it go.
I think there's a possibility. You take the risk of having a Streisand effect, where if this is this app that has to market on their own, it has to reach iPhone people on their own, that's one thing. But if Apple makes all of these steps to make this a hated party, now, I mean, there's a way that I can actually do I was going to switch to the iPhone for exactly this reason, but I did not. Thank you, Apple. Yeah. I did not know that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's somebody saying in the Discord, just look at the Play Store downloads. They can get at least a thumbnail of, you know, if you see a million people downloading Beeper Mini, Apple's going to be much more interested in taking action than if you see 10,000 people downloading it. So that's the,
I think I give it 3 months on the inside, 6 months on the outside. By the time they get to WWDC, it's gone.
Yeah. I fully believe Apple can technically do it.
And they will.
I do think there's a big concern given the regulatory climate that there's a cost to doing it. So really, it's going to come down to, does the cost of doing it outweigh the loss, the opportunity cost of all these people using it? If a million people use it, you're right, Alex. They'll shut it down.
I think you're right. I think that's going to be part of their calculus too, because that would be a wonderful defense to have in their tool belt when they call. People do have our users do have an option if Android users want to participate in iMessage. There's a third party solution. Right. It works well.
And we allow it.
Yeah,
we tried really hard to crush it, but we decided not to spend $1 trillion to buy out the company.
Their argument's going to be that the blue bubble tells you that you're at a certain level of security you're interacting with another iMessage.
It breaks their security.
Breaks the security, and they're gonna secure it. I mean, that's an argument.
That would be a lie, but they might say that.
Well, allowing it to have a third party have access to their message system.
Jason, you don't know how secure that
certificates.
You don't know
according,
how secure
according
that
to
Android
the company, they are using. Well, that's I mean, yeah, sure, yeah. I guess. But how secure is a Mac that's using iMessage either?
Well, Apple thinks it's very secure. Apple thinks the Android is terrible.
They can fib about it all they want. They can say, oh, well, the problem is that it's on Android, which is fundamentally insecure. But what they will not be able to say, at least according to what we know, is that the old argument, which was, oh, all of these services are fundamentally insecure because there's a middleman who is translating your information and sending it onto your phone.
Yeah.
That's not happening here. And that's why this is an interesting, I don't know. Again, I would not invest in this company either, but it is putting Apple in a bit of a spot because if Apple crushes it, it looks bad for them, but they may still need to crush it, and how they crush it is an issue, and they can't maybe legally crush it. And if they have to do, I mean, imagine if they realize they have to actually reprioritize some of their resources in order to get the login credentials stuff to be different because they can't just pull the plug. Like, that's a huge deal inside Apple where they have to make an effort and spend a lot of money to fix this.
The analog is a DVD. John's cracking the encryption DCSS on DVDs. There was no way to fix that without breaking every DVD player. So the movie industry just had to live with it, and they never were able to fix that.
Well, they were able to make it illegal to circumvent digital copy protection during the
digital copyright. They went to the DMCA. Copyright. That's right. Yeah.
They could say, so basically we have that fallacy where we have the right from the Sony Betamax case to translate, to basically transmogrify something we bought onto another format for our convenience or for a backup. But we have another law that says that if they protect it in such a way that it would break the DMs, I'm not allowed to do that, which is why, again, which is why we get back to sometimes it feels like you almost have an ethical, ethical sword and shield at your back. Yeah. But yeah, this is, I'm kind of in between. I think that I don't know how this is going to play out. Like if they were, Let's say that I would be willing to spend $2 a month on a month-by-month basis. I would not necessarily buy the annual subscription yet.
Exactly. My point.
But, man, because they're it's just, I'm sorry, I'll wrap this up, but they're being really bold. They're almost saying, oh, no, please, Apple, tell us that it's insecure. We're willing to show everybody exactly that we're using the exact same security product. Oh, no. Really? We'd be very happy to demonstrate that we used complete documented clean room technology to actually grade this. That your argument is going to come all the way down to, we don't want people to use iMessage, and we're willing to crush anybody who tries.
I have a feeling that Apple,
they feel a little bit bold. That's what it seems like.
I have a feeling that I don't know what Apple will do either. If it was me, I wouldn't even kill it. I would just make it glitchy.
Slightly unreliable.
All you have to do is have people not get 5 or 6 messages in a day, and they'll just stop using it. Like, you don't have to kill it. You don't have to make any announcement. You just have to be like, well, it's a weird app, and not have to. Like, the way to kill it is just a little bit of poison, not all of it.
Yeah, which episode are we going to be talking about how iMessage on iPhones has become really glitchy because people are losing messages and nobody can really explain why?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see.
I also should point out that the product I use and have recommended for a long time, AirMessage, which is open source and does not charge, runs on your Mac at home as a server, Apple's done nothing about. So, maybe the difference will be the $2 a month. Maybe Apple is just going to say it's not worth it to fight this. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
If I were a betting man, I would take your money now, but let's not. What we are going to take is a break so that you can get your picks of the week prepared, ladies and gentlemen. You figure out which one's the lady. Our show today brought to you by ZocDoc. Oh, you know that feeling. The internet is so great when you're searching for that perfect product, and you can go and you can research and you can read 1,000 reviews and you can find it. And there it is. It's the perfect product. You know it's going to work. You know people love it. And it has 5 stars. It checks all your boxes and it arrives in 48 hours. That is one of the great benefits of the internet. Unfortunately, while you can get those, the perfect water pick, if you want to do the same thing with a good doctor, it could take forever to get an appointment, and you have no idea if they're good until now. ZocDoc, and I have used this, so I can tell you, it is awesome. It's a place to find and book great doctors, read reviews from actual patients, and many of these doctors have appointments available within 24 hours. ZocDoc, it's a free app where you can find amazing doctors and book appointments online. We're talking about booking appointments with thousands of top-rated patient-reviewed doctors and specialists. You can filter specifically for the ones who, for instance, take your insurance or are located near you and treat almost any condition you're searching for. It's really fantastic. All with real verified reviews from actual patients, no bots. The average wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc between 24 and 48 hours. That's all. In fact, in many cases, you can get same-day appointments. So if you need a doc right now, ZocDoc, ZocDoc.com/MacBreak. You can book them right in the app. Just a couple of taps. You don't have to tell the receptionist what's ailing you. ZocDoc, which I appreciate. I got this rash. ZocDoc, get the app for free, then find and book a top-rated doctor today. Now, I know you can go to the App Store and get it, and you're smart. You probably already did. But if you would do me a favor and go to ZocDoc.com/MacBreak and click the link, that way they know you saw it here. That helps us a lot. ZocDoc.com/MacBreak. And why shouldn't you? It's absolutely free. ZocDoc.com/MacBreak. I never start with you, Alex Lindsay. Let me start with you and your pick of the week this week.
So one of the things that I have to do a lot is actually change frame rates. Oops, sorry. I had my button on. A lot of times I have to change frame rates. So I get stuff at 24 frames per second and I have to put it to 60 or 30 or something else. And trying to do that has been a challenge, you know, looking for all the different options. You can run it through a Teranex. You can run it through compressor. You can just put it into Resolve or Premiere and or Final Cut and export it out. There's a lot of different options. And a lot of times they end up a little framey. You start to see little frames or little bits of frames still there because you're taking, let's say, 24 to 60 frames a second. And or you want to go to slow motion and it basically has to draw new frames in between those. So it has 24 frames per second. It's got to add three or four more frames per second or three or four per frame. You're going to add more of them there. So figuring that out has been a challenge. And a lot of us are starting to do a lot of work. And I spent a lot of last week inside of Video AI by Topaz. And it's not for the kind of stuff that I do, it's not a super expensive. It's $300, but in the production world, that's not a huge price.
I've been using Photo AI, which is really interesting. They do it for video and stills.
Yeah, and Video AI. So what I was doing was I'm using this thing called Chronos, which is one of the AI settings they have there, which is really dialed in. We talk about these these systems that are dialed in to do one thing or another. And so it can denoise, it can increase the resolution, it can make it sharper, but it can also add more frames. And so I went from 24 to 60. And I was amazed.
Yeah.
Like I've never seen interpolation as good as what I saw here. And so I was.
These guys, I mean, I've used Topaz plugins for a long time. They're good.
For resizing, denoising.
Yeah.
I've used Topaz for a decade. So it's not, or maybe not a decade, but 6 or 8 years. And so it's a very good, very good set of plugins. But this one specifically, what I wanted to do was, again, change that frame rate. From 24 to 60. And usually that's a pretty big jump and you're going to end up with some, kind of jagged movement as you go through that. And it actually worked really, really well. It takes a long time to process on my Mac Studio. Taking an hour and a half of this is about, at 4K, it's like 63 hours.
Wow.
So it takes a long time to process.
If I did it with the M3 Max, fast it would go. That's interesting.
Yeah. No, it's definitely become one of those apps. Now it doesn't look like it, it's doing a lot of hard work and, you can get PCs with big graphics cards and try to, make it go faster. And so it's not necessarily the most efficient process to that, but when it comes to adding a lot of extra frames, it was really successful. And a lot of us are kind of starting to play with it a lot more. Anyway, I would definitely check it out. Unfortunately, there's not a demo version of it. So there's not an easy way to test it, but if you're really looking for something and you need to do frame conversion, we found it to be pretty darn successful.
Topaz says unconditional 30-day refund guarantee. So you basically refund. Got a 30-day trial.
You got to put money up back. Front.
You got to pay the money though.
I will say I don't agree with that. I think that they're better off. I would at least have a watermarked version with a trial.
There you go. Just put a watermark
then do it. Yeah. Then do it. But I guess they've decided to go down that path. You can get your money back from it. But anyway, I'm not going to ask them for money back because it won't go.
So it does a lot. So, yeah. It sharpens. It stabilizes. Yeah. It changes frame rate. It's smooth.
It's a nice interface too. It's not a plugin. This is a standalone app. You just open it up, throw your stuff in, and hit go. So,
Alex, did you try putting a pan of Jiffy Pop on the top of your Mac Studio when you started this? I'm wondering what would happen.
You could fry an egg on that thing. I think we're going to see more and more AI used in tools like this. I think that's very interesting.
I have to admit, AI. I don't know if I use it every single day, but it is something that, especially the generative AI stuff in Photoshop, I use all the time. Yeah. Like people give me, I have headshots that I get for the pot, for Gray Matter Touch Show. And sometimes people give me a square and I need a rectangle and I just select the two sides and hit return. Yep. And it just goes, I'm just going to open that up for you.
It's miraculous. I was posting a picture from my town's the tree lighting ceremony and Santa was there in the fire truck. And I'm like, okay, there is the name of my town emblazoned on the side of that truck in the middle of the fire department shield. And all I have to do is select the text and say, remove this. And suddenly it's the exact, it's not just, oh, okay, it masked it out. Like, no, it created a version of that shield that did not have any text in it. And I'm like, and it was like, for, and it takes all of 5 seconds. So why would you not do everything that you want to do? Yeah. This is, it's mind blowing.
TopazLabs.com. Andy Inoko, pick of the week.
Not everybody has like a panic play date handheld game. I can tell you that if one of the reasons why you did not buy one is because there's like a year and a half waiting list. I just checked yesterday, and they're finally at the point where if you order one today, you will get one before Christmas.
Oh, nice.
It is. Yeah. And we've talked about this before. All I'll say is that for someone who does not want even a Nintendo Switch style, like gaming intensity experience, someone who likes like simple little puzzle games, simple, like 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, at most an hour of playtime per game, and who does not necessarily want to spend more than like $2, $3, $4, maximum of like $10 per game, it really is pretty sweet. It's not for everybody, but it is exactly for me. So I'm glad I got it like about a year or so ago. So I'm mentioning it today because there is an advent calendar of games available for the Playdate. It's not sponsored by Panic. It's like I think it's itch.io or some sort of consortium of independent developers. So every day there is like a new Playdate game that is on really nice discount, and I've bought almost all of the five that have been available so far, because each of them has been something that at some point like that looks like a really cool game, and because it was like all of like $6, I'm like, I will definitely check back on this because I can't simply buy every game that is interesting to me. But now it's like, oh wow, I can get Squish for $2 instead of $6. Damn it, buy it. And it just reminds me of exactly why I love this little game thing, because again, just little games that are there for you for like 15 minutes when you're, or 20 minutes or an hour when you're at the gate waiting for an airplane, or you just got like, you just want 10 or 15 minutes of a break from something. I love how like every single developer of these games is not just simply porting something that has been seen 100 times since the original Game Boy. They're like, they've got a really weird idea for a game, and they know that, okay, here's a really weird little handheld game console, and the people who are buying it are pretty weird to begin with. So I think we can make $5 on this. But yeah, if you have a Playdate, definitely check out playdates-advent.com. If you don't have a Playdate, again, it's not as cheap as it was when it was pre-ordering. It's $199, but you do get 20 games with it, and they're all really good games. So I'd say that I'm not recommending it wholeheartedly, because again, it's not for everybody, but if this interests you, if you just need a nudge to like actually go ahead on this, then I think go ahead on this. I think you'll enjoy it.
In the early days, when we talked about the Playdate a lot, because I have one too, the knock on it was there weren't that many games. It's a brand new platform, and it's a little tiny thing from a little tiny developer. And how many games could there really be? And that's why Panic did a season of games when you bought it, so you get those 20 games. Let me tell you, they did a new app. Panic did a new app that is a store app. Inside there, you can still sideload and do all those things, but they put a store app in, and oh my god, there are so many Playdate games now. Yeah. So if you shied away from Playdate, or you put it in a drawer a year ago, there are so many good, fun, different genre games now that it's totally worth reconsidering whether you might want to play.
Mine's still on the mine's on the shelf because I
understandable
there was nothing there. But what's
There's
your
favorite now?
What should I get, Jason? What's your favorite?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, my favorite games are still in the subscriptions.
Yeah.
Again, Squish is, but Squish. Generations. Okay. Generations is one of the best games ever.
I played Generations on the iPhone, and I love it. Yeah.
I these really interesting. So Squish is a game where you're just trying to get like, you can't see it. The only enduring complaint people have about it is the lack of a backlight. It's a beautiful, like high contrast display.
It looks like a SokoBot kind of game where you're sliding.
Yeah, it's like you're trying to move like this ball into like this like.
Yeah, I love those kinds of games.
But they're blocks that behave differently depending on how you push. And they're basically simple little puzzles that don't look like huge rule based puzzles. Yeah. And again, it's on sale today. Each advent calendar thing is on sale for 2 or 3 days. Before it closes up, or I don't know if it's early, maybe they even keep it over.
Playdate-advent.com.
I bet Jason, like we were sort of like the same worry that okay, so they decided to make it quirky with a crank. That means that there's going to be 81 versions of solitaire and 100 different fishing games, aren't there? And like, no, they're like 2 fishing games total. So
I was surprised about that. Mr. Jason Snell, pick of the week.
Well, we mentioned it earlier, so I'm going to cheat and pick something I picked about a year ago, which is Channels. The DVR server app that lets you, if you've got you can attach a box with a cable card, you can attach a box that attaches to an antenna to do over the air, or yes, you can do it for streaming. as well. There are various, depending on what service you've got, if you've got something like YouTube TV or Fubo, or if you've got a cable subscription even, there are some channels that you can just record on there, and it will link in. It'll look at files on your server that you've got for Plex or something like that as well. You can create virtual channels, which is fun. So I've got like the Doctor Who Christmas special channel, and it's a virtual channel. You just tune to it, and it is playing through at
all
random.
One by
and
one.
I've got a MASH channel that plays through all the episodes of MASH. You just tune it in and see what there is, and you don't worry about it. It's so thoughtfully designed. It is a little bit like Plex from an alternate universe, but it's also like TiVo done as an app on your Apple TV. The Apple TV app is excellent. The iPad app is excellent. It's just a really good app if you're in need for this sort of thing. And like I said, this is how I record some sports this way. And then it's on your hard drive, which is actually kind of nice if it's like a thing you want to save and treasure. If you're on Jeopardy, you can record it and then save that episode of Jeopardy for all eternity if you want to. So
are you on Jeopardy soon?
I have not been on Jeopardy yet. I hope one day to be on Jeopardy. That'd be great.
Yeah, it's a dream of mine, but my brain is slowly going, so I don't think it's going to happen. But
it is a challenge. I realize I'm never going to be on Survivor, so if I'm going to be on anything, maybe it'll be Jeopardy. But I gotta get. I'm not too old for Survivor.
Basically, with the skills I have left, it's going to be Wheel of Fortune or nothing.
All right. Well, you know, just avoid bankrupt, and you'll be fine.
Yeah. Thank you, Jason Snell. SixColors.com is the website.
Check it out.
He does a million podcasts. They're all listed at sixcolors.com.
A podcast.
Is it zillions now? Wow, that's great.
I think so. At this point, zillions of podcasts.
Sixcolors.com/Jason.
Yeah. Even my sleep.
He's podcasting all the time.
That's
Look
my
that.
Snoring podcast. You know, it's there.
ASMR. Very, very lucrative field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice job. Well done. Sixcolors.com. Thank you, Jason.
Thank
and
you,
I appreciate you filling in last week, too. It's sitting in the big chair. Andy Iannocco, GBH in Boston. When are you going to be on next?
You missed me last time, but I'm next on next Thursday at 12:30, I think. Go to WGBHnews.org to stream it live or later, or to stream my last appearance last week.
Very nice. And Alex Lindsay, OfficeHours.global, 7 days a week for great content. What's going on this week at Office Hours?
Oh, you know it. It's today we sat through Motion. Alex Goldner, who's probably one of the two or three people that I asked for advice on Apple Motion, came on. We started off. The funny thing is we're very question based. So we started off with a plan of what we were going to talk about, lower thirds and everything else. And we just ended up answering questions about Motion. So anyway, we are going to be talking about the Blackmagic camera actually on Thursday.
Oh.
Just kind of what we've learned so far. And I'm talking a little bit about the pipeline of how I record the Michael Krasny show, which has got a lot less infrastructure than Twit. So it's all in my office right now. And so we're going to talk about how that works tomorrow.
I'd only wish I'd known you before I set up Twit. That's all I can say.
But then we have, speaking of the Gray Matter dot show, our Jason Snell.
Oh,
I know you've heard of, is going to be on this Friday. So we're really excited to have
story.
Jason on. So
how exciting.
Story. Yeah.
All right. So Gray Matter dot show, GREY. Yep. Very nice with Michael Krasny. Oh, I will. Can't wait to hear. I would really like to know what's going on in Jason's brain. So that will be.
Good question.
That will be a treat.
and Michael will get it out of him.
He's done us all now, right? He did Andy. He did me.
Yep.
Has he ever interviewed you, Alex?
He hasn't interviewed me yet.
Yeah. Maybe you should get in front of the microphone.
Yeah. Maybe so.
Alex Lindsay, OfficeHours.global, GrayMatter.show, Andy Iannocco. I give your website, but what's the point? that's me.
Well, now we're moving into active shame.
I've hurt you, and I'm sorry. I want to make amends. I'm sorry, Andy. And, of course, Jason Snell, sixcolors.com. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. I especially want to thank our Club Twit members who literally make this show possible. We've been looking at our prospects for next year. And currently we are at a $1.1 million deficit. We would like to make that up because we want to keep the lights on and keep the shows rolling. If you are a member, thank you. If you're not, twit.tv/clubtwit. It's $7 a month. Thank you very much. You get ad-free versions of this show and everything else we do. You get special shows that we only put out for club members, special content. You also get access to the Club Twit Discord, which is a wonderful community. I really love going in there. So if you're not yet a member, twit.tv/clubtwit. And you know what? You're thinking about a holiday gift for the geek in your life? What a great gift a year membership would be, $84, or even just to give them a month. twit.tv/clubtwit. Thank you so much in advance. I really deeply appreciate the contribution. We do this show. We do stream it live on YouTube the minute the show starts, and we discontinue the stream when the show ends so that you won't see the super secret hot stuff in between. No, there's it's just me going to another room. So if you want to watch those streams live, you can do it in the Discord, of course, as a club member, but we also now we decided, you know what, let's put it up. Well, let's put it up on YouTube as well. So youtube.com/twit. If you hit the bell, I get nothing from that, but you would at least get a notification when we go live. So consider that. That's one way you can watch live. It's every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1900 UTC. After the fact, of course, you can download the show, God willing, with commercials at twit.tv/MBW. You can also subscribe in your favorite podcast player. You'll get it automatically. And there is a full YouTube channel with the video on YouTube as well. Thank you so much, everybody. I have the unpleasant, sad duty at this point to tell you, you better get back to work because break time is over. Or stick around for security now. Bye-bye.
Oh, hey, that's a really nice iPhone you have there. You totally picked the right color. Hey, since you do use an iPhone and maybe use an iPad or an Apple Watch or an Apple TV, well, you should check out iOS Today. It's a show that I, Micah Sargent, and my co-host Rosemary Orchard host every Tuesday right here on the Twit Network. It covers all things iOS, tvOS, HomePodOS, WatchOS, iPadOS. It's all the OSs that Apple has on offer. And we love to give you tips and tricks about making the most of those devices, checking out great apps and services, and answering your tech questions. I hope you check it out.